show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 15th day of March, 2024. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's, of course, where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between in the great globe round. And where, if you should happen to wander by right this very instant, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That's Anatole and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo. And capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Primer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger, in Oregon. Anatole, don't dead name me. Bad Anatole, bad. Beware the Ides of March. As Caesar is reported to have said on the morning of the 15th of March, 44 B.C. Well, old man, the Ides of March are come, to which the man replied, but not yet gone. I always thought that was a bit presumptive of Caesar, inasmuch as that would have been said about, 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, really? Tweaking the goddess of irony on her pink tomato nose at 7 o'clock in the morning when there's an entire day ahead of you, for which you one should reasonably beware? I mean, not saying, just, you know, saying. Momentous day that. Yeah, I just realized what I was thinking. I've been to Rome. I went when I was, what, 10th grade? My Latin class went over break, spring break. And I was thinking back to it, and I think I was actually in Rome on the Ides of March on that trip. Let's see, what would that have been? 1978. I need to look at the calendar and go back to the 1978 calendar and see when the Ides fell for that. But it's, as Steve in New York noted earlier today, bless your heart, and thank you, Steve. In the good way, bless your heart. How perfect is it that the Ides of March falls on a Friday? You can roam till your heart's content tonight. And the minute I read that, I turned on the B-52s. Singing Rome. R-O-A-M, not O-R-M-A. Yeah, there's not, even on a gray and rainy day, the B-52s will always pick up your spirits. And it is gray and rainy here. I mean, this is a very Ides of March kind of day, but tomorrow's going to be pretty. We'll get up in the mid-60s. I have to go to a county Democratic convention in the morning, but I'll get the fire started, and there will be ribs by sunset, and the corned beef will be done, because I'm going to start that in the sous vide before I leave tomorrow morning. So, you know, corned beef and cabbage for St. Patrick's Day. Hi. What's that, Lee, in New York? I thought that Shakespeare had a soothsayer utter it to Caesar. Well, yeah. The soothsayer says, beware the Ides of March. And then Caesar, on the morning of the Ides, says, well, the Ides of March are here, old man. And the soothsayer replies, but not yet gone. That's the, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my recollection is off. But anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, oh, by the way, tell those little Keebler orcs that I started the program on time this evening. Somebody's going to drop a house on them. But I did. But like I said, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we say thank you to our middle-of-the-month subscribers. And so that means thank you ever so kindly to Robert. Thank you, Robert, and thank you, David, in Oregon. And by the way, Gino's challenge is still on the table. There's $225 of it to go, remaining out of 300. It will get us from a completely unfunded week to at least having Tuesday and Monday funded of this week. That's a $300 challenge. So Gino will meet the next 225, double the next 225 that comes in. And of course, the name of the challenge is the Aaron Rodgers is a despicable wacko challenge. So, if you'd like to see your money doubled, Gino's happy to do it. And that'll get us down to $900 to go. And we are at least fully funded for last week. We need to start on this week now. And like I said, hopefully we'll get down to nine. Be great if we got down to six. So that's where that all is. PayPal buttons at headon.live on the main page. The Patreon button is under the contribute tab. The mailing address, and by the way, thank you to our dear friend Dave in Kentucky. Thank you so much. Dave kicked in via the U.S. Postal Service. The mailing address, of course, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And please make all checks and money orders. Goodness me, is it going to be one of those evenings? Please make all checks and money orders payable to Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Because of changes in how we bank now that Boss Man Wayne is no longer with us. So it is Friday on the front porch. And here in about 50 minutes or so, we will gather together over the river and through the woods in the old holler tree that we do sublet from the Keebler elves, who have been making a bit of a nuisance of themselves and being more troll than elf of late, but that's okay. I can always call North Pole Customs and Border Enforcement and report them as being... Well, AWOL from Santa's workshop. News broke right before the program began that, in fact, Judge Marchand in the criminal trial of Nitwit Nero in Manhattan has... After both lawyers for Nitwit Nero and for the DA, Alvin Bragg, suggested a continuation of the case. Remember, it was set to start 10 days from today, on the 25th day of March. Well, they both said, well, they both said, you know, a 30-day continuance would be good, and it turns out the reason for that is because there's probably like 15,000 pages of potential new evidence that's coming over to the Manhattan court from the Southern District of New York and the U.S. Attorney's Office there. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said he's expecting one more set of documents from the U.S. Attorney's Office. And it's evidence that it will have to be analyzed and disclosed to the defense. Recently, the U.S. Attorney's Office provided 100,000 pages of documents, and there's 15,000 more coming. And Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers began barking and howling and shrieking and squealing, saying that they didn't have enough time to review the evidence. They want a 90-day delay. Bragg said 30. And today, Judge Marchon granted a 30-day continuance. And that will be that continuance will be in full force and effect while he, the judge, considers the arguments about when to hold the trial that are pending before him. And, of course, Alvin Bragg is not happy with the U.S. Attorney's Office. He himself has said that the federal prosecutors improperly withheld materials from him previously. So we'll just watch that space for a little bit. He's obviously not going to trial on the 25th, and the game, of course, is to keep him from going to trial until approximately 4 days after the sun burns out. Lee, I get that. Lee in New York says the Keebler orcs. I hate to say this, but those lawyers of Keebletree do not care about all the times that you're on time. Each lateness is all they care about, just like the police do not care about the times you were not speeding. And other court news, and Ron in Raleigh touches upon it with the subject line, WTF. Roxy, since you had a couple Joe in law school, could you explain to me what the fuck the judge in Georgia was thinking in this bullshit decision on whether or not Fani Willis should step down from the Trump case? Another instance of a judge or prosecutor saying nothing wrong happened, but I'm going to throw a sabot into the works, or sabot. The more this shit goes on, the more I get the sinking feeling that all these motherfuckers are angling to cut Donnie loose. It can feel that way. I'm not entirely incensed by Judge McAfee's decision in Georgia. He didn't say she should step down. He gave her a choice. He gave Fani Willis a choice. And it's an obvious choice. She stays on as prosecutor, and Wade has to go, or Wade stays on, and she has to step away. She is the elected district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, so Mr. Wade gotta go. And honestly, I'm not reading a lot of commentary from, anyone who knows anything about the practice of law, and particularly prosecution, and the bench, who's really rushing to Fani Willis's defense. Now, I mean, plenty of people said, no, this is not anything that should get the case dismissed. It's certainly not anything worth removing her over. But by the same token, while it's true, and anybody who ever watched L.A. Law knows it, or Ally McBeal, or in a slightly more modern era, Suits, knows that, great big silk stocking law firms are just they're just a veritable patent place of illicit relationships. I don't think it's really like that between you and me. But it's also unavoidably true that human beings, well, remember that quote from the epigraph to Kill a Mockingbird from Charles Lamb? I suppose even lawyers once were children, too. Well, lawyers are human. And sometimes, I don't know, maybe lawyers fall into bed with each other because people who aren't lawyers have a hard time understanding people who are. That's a broad generalization, but I think there's an element of truth to it. And attractions develop, and if you work in close quarters, or if you're you run across each other, you know, sooner or later somebody's going to say, "Hey, you want to go get coffee?" And then you get coffee, and the next thing you know, what was that line that Matt sent yesterday? And next thing you know, you're on your back with your legs in the air and your wig on crooked. But it is not per se unethical for two lawyers in the same firm to be making the beast with two backs. What is, and this is what Scott McAfee, the judge, focused on, what is important is the appearance of impropriety. And we have talked about the appearance of impropriety on numerous occasions on this program, and it serves its purpose. And the fact of the matter is, if it was properly used, for instance, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, the most crooked person ever to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States, would not be sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States. Because he's nothing but one great big, humongous, vast, not just appearance of impropriety, but actual improprieties. And honestly, regardless of whether the Trump case was coming or not, it probably was not the best idea in the world for the elected district attorney to start knocking boots with a subordinate. I mean, it's there's a dozen different reasons why it's not a great idea. That said, the appearance of impropriety, you know, Judge McAfee did not say it was improper. He said that the DA has to avoid the appearance of impropriety, because the DA is, among other things, a constitutionally mandated elected official of the state within the state of Georgia. And so the appearance of impropriety standard obtains. Curiously enough, the appearance of impropriety standard is often referred to as the Caesar's wife rule. You know, Caesar's wife must be above reproach, beyond reproach. Which I imagine made life pretty shitty for Calpurnia, considering the fact that Gaius Julius Caesar was known as a bit of a man-ho. I mean, he was involved for years in an affair with a woman named Servilia, S-E-R-V-I-L-I-A, Servilia, with whom he was said to be in love, and she was definitely quite besotted with him. In fact, she was the mother of Brutus. And if my memory serves me correctly, she was also the sister of Cato the Younger. And Cato the Younger's hatred for Julius Caesar was so deep and so abiding that one day in the Senate chambers, an epistle, correspondence, was delivered to Caesar. And Cato was so convinced that it was going to, that it was a letter from a co-conspirator of his who, that would prove that Caesar was out to overturn the Republic and name himself the King of Rome, which was just something one did not do back then, that he insisted upon Caesar reading it aloud before the conscript fathers. Which Caesar obliged him by doing. And it turned out to be a really, really hot and steamy love letter from Brutus's mama Aurelia, I mean Sir Willia. Aurelia was, no. Well, anyway, it was from Sir Willia. And so Cato was brutally humiliated on his own, on his own initiative. But that was Sir Willia. Calpurnia, however, his lady wife, had to so maintain her existence as to never make anything that she did seem even remotely improper. And it's the avoidance of this, that impropriety, the mere appearance of impropriety, that was at play in the ruling regarding Fani Willis. And Judge McAfee's not wrong. It looks bad when the DA is banging a subordinate. Whether it started before the Trump prosecution, whether it ended after, or whether it ended before the Trump prosecution, it doesn't matter. It looks horrible. And it's not Judge McAfee's fault that Fani Willis put herself in this situation. On the other hand, I do disagree with Judge McAfee's ruling that he thought it might be necessary for him to enter a gag order against the DA because she had the unmitigated temerity to speak out in a church on a Sunday in January and talk about some of the racist mofos who were arrayed against her. And Scott McAfee said it's not okay to call people racist just because they disagree with you. The question for me is, what if it's not about disagreement? What if they really are a bunch of maggot racists? I mean, racist and maggot are pretty much hand in hand. In fact, there's one story out there today. Do you remember, a few months back when, I'm sorry, any story whose headline begins, and I've got it right here, I mean, I don't care if the I don't care if the end of the headline is lands on moon or cures cancer or wins lottery. Any headline that begins with gay black Republican is going to have to be at least a little bit comedic. I mean, why not just say self-hating dude? But anyway, the Newsweek headline reads, gay black Republican to release receipts on MAGA. This is the guy, Rob Smith, an Army veteran, who this past December showed a video of a bunch of the white frat boy maggot assholes upbraiding him for his blackness and his gayness. And he said that he was confronted and surrounded by some white supremacists that don't like gays or blacks in the Republican Party. And you could hear him in the audio calling him everything but a child of God. He then pogo-sticked up onto the cross with a boutique pogo stick lovingly crafted by the gang down at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium, proudly located in Talibandianapolis, Talibandiana for lo these 20 years and more. And he pogo-sticked up onto it, grabbed the nail gun, nailed himself right in, put the INRI sign above him, I'm nailed right in, and proceeded to claim that he was the victim of a hate crime. He may have been. He may have been. But yesterday, Rob Smith said that no conservative pundits had, and I know, quelle surprise, right? No conservative pundits had reached out to Rob Smith to interview him about a bunch of white fraternity boy asshole maggots being racist and homophobic toward him. And so Smith, who went to X and posted the excrement, said those people were not pretend Republicans or Antifa types. They were all involved with RN Renewal and direct ties to other orgs, and I have many more receipts to back it up, which will be released in the coming weeks. Yeah, Republicans for National Renewal. No one has identified the maggot frat boys who were berating him as yet. Smith, being a bit cagey, said, in fact, I may have had someone doing just that, you know, looking into the tax-exempt status of the organization. I may have had someone looking into lots of things about those who participated in the harassment, some of whom really don't need any legal trouble. But not to worry, he is, after all, a gay black Republican. Jesus wept. And he's still out there being a good, God-fearing, Trump-loving Republican. Toilet Paper USA, headed by the guy with the big, giant, empty head, Charlie Kirk, they condemned anyone, the actions, not the people. They condemned the actions of yelling slurs at Rob Smith. Toilet Paper USA said in a statement, these people started yelling disgusting slurs at him. He responded well and held his ground, but this should have never happened to Rob. What's captured in the video posted by Rob is truly abhorrent, disgusting behavior, and it's unacceptable anyone should have to endure that type of treatment. Rob Smith went on to call them soulless, dead-eyed white supremacists. I felt like these people could have bashed in my brains had they gotten the chance. I deal with these people in real life, and I know for a fact where they're coming from. I know that a lot of these people have infiltrated these conservative organizations from top to bottom. Huh? The guy getting his face eaten by leopards has just figured out that the leopards eating people's face party is full of leopards. It's repulsive what was done to him and what was said to him. It's disgusting. But by the same token, for God's sakes, it's the Republican Party. It is the Maggot Party. It is the GQP. And they are all merely synonyms for the same organism. That's all. Lee in New York, gay black Republican, protected by the Endangered Species Act. I know. It's down to like one or maybe two. And that's before we even get to the young man who got felt up by Matthew Schlapp. Schlappity, 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 schlappity. Sorry, couldn't help it. Jesus wept, Emilio says. Hellraiser 1 reference? Quit that. Having a romantic relationship with a prosecutor on your team is not alone an ethical lapse. Via Slate's senior jurisprudence editor Jeremy Stahl, Flavio sends the quote along, having a romantic relationship with another prosecutor on your team is not in and of itself an ethical lapse, but keeping it quiet from anyone and everyone while continuing to pay that employee in a case with the highest possible stakes for our democracy against a notoriously combative defendant is a disastrous lapse. Which is the terminology that you use when you're the senior jurisprudence editor for an outfit like Slate. Folks out here who speak in the words and the language most commonly used by everyday Americans would call that a monumental fuck up. I mean, that's one of those what in God's name were you thinking moments. Back during the 8 years of the Obama administration, we would call that a Jesus Barack moment. Not suggesting that Barack Obama ever did anything of the sort. And precisely, Flavio, appearance of impropriety. Clarence Thomas took decades of bribes from a billionaire. And you guys want Fannie Willis, who did nothing wrong, to recuse? Exactly. And, of course, there is a distinction there as well. Fannie Willis is a prosecutor, not a judge. The actual appearance of impropriety standard is a billion, a trillion, a quadrillion times more important and profound for a justice of the Supreme Court. And that, of course, is why they have no rules. Speaking of which, curious Supreme Court ruling today. One of those politics makes strange bedfellows moments. They issued a ruling today, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties did. And the ruling was an ugly one. There's a statute called, it's a federal statute, called the First Step Act. And it was passed as a matter of sentencing reform. I don't know if either Steve or Billable Rick know about this, but it was meant to be a means by which people who had been convicted and imprisoned on nonviolent, low-level drug charges for drug dealers. And there's a laundry list of factors to be considered, all of which have to be met without resorting to the old Schoolhouse Rock Conjunction video. Played that a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to Miss Terry. The statute uses the word and. And as such, the Supreme Court literally got into a deep and abiding philosophical and jurisprudential debate over the meaning of and. And here's what's weird. The way the majority shaped up, it was a 6-3 decision. But that 6-3 decision was Elena Kagan and Old Balls and Strikes Roberts and Fappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath and Beer Boofin' Brat and the Handmaid. That's the 6-judge majority. The minority was Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch. And Gorsuch, dissenting, said, adopting the government's preferred interpretation guarantees that thousands more people in the federal justice system will be denied a chance, just a chance, at an individualized sentence. For them, the First Step Act offers no hope. The case centered on a dude by the name of Mark Pulsifer. Back in 2020, Mark Pulsifer entered a guilty plea to distributing meth. And the ultimate outcome of this Supreme Court case is that Elena Kagan says, sorry, Mark Pulsifer, we got together in the lunchroom here at the court and we put your case in the Pulsifer and we pulsified it for a while. And the answer is, go back to prison for a really long time. This act does not apply to you. Because he got rung up on a mandatory minimum 15-year sentence. And he wanted to use the First Step Act to reduce his sentence. And Elena Kagan said that he hadn't met all the necessary elements. And the court said, no, you don't get to just meet some. You got to meet every last one of them. Otherwise, no fruit cup. Kagan, in her reasoning, said that Congress didn't extend safety valve relief to all defendants, but only to some. I think that's inherent in the definition of the act. But they wrangled. Well, honestly, they wrangled like the early church wrangled over prepositions. You know, the early church came to blows over things like of and by and through. Well, this was wrangling over and. Depends on what your definition of is. Remember that? And of course, once again, that old law school aphorism, hard cases make bad law. And here we are. And so this guy's going to spend 15 years in federal hard time. I don't know enough about the underlying particulars of the case, but, you know, he pled guilty to distributing meth. He may have been lucky that he didn't catch a murder charge. Back to relationships at work. Lee in New York says, I saw this. A husband and wife had the same boss. She was her husband's boss's administrative assistant. I complained to the ombudsperson because she had her husband's boss's priorities at her fingertips. She knows the new projects, her husband's employee review, her husband's peer reviews. The ombudsperson saw nothing wrong because they are organized in different departments. She even left on maternity leave and came back to the same position. This was a big company. And yet, I suppose there was enough distance. They both answered to the same person, but out of different compartments, as it were. Thanks, Lee. Emilio asks, and what does the statute say about the tenets of their constitution? I'll let myself out and call the fire brigade. Tenets. Shame upon you, Emilio. The llama is barely conscious. Okay, protected by the Endangered Species Act deserves a cowbell. I don't want to be parsimonious with the cowbells this evening. Flavio asking, why did the Southern District of New York sit on all this evidence? Could it be Southern District of New York is maggot infested? It depends on whether it's damning or exculpatory. But it also, I mean, it's possible that this is not necessarily old evidence. Because investigations are ongoing. But a lot of the time, federal prosecutors and state or county prosecutors don't necessarily get on real good. There's a bit of a God complex, and, well, I bet you Billable Rick could address this. There's a bit of a God complex in U.S. attorneys' offices, and a tendency to think that they're more prosecutorial than some backcountry hick prosecutor with, you know, hayseeds behind their ears. Is what it is. Lee says, so much evidence. I'm not a lawyer, but do they really need all the evidence? If a murder is identifiable on 10 cameras recording the murder, is it really necessary to wait for the review of all the footage from the other 1,000 cameras in the area? Well, when you're talking about proof beyond a reasonable doubt and the absolute requirement to disclose any and all exculpatory evidence, if any of that evidence is exculpatory and you don't disclose it to the defense, you are, and this is a complicated legal term, fucked. Indicted idiot, Lee says, seems to be able to delay till the sun burns out because he generated so much evidence that the Library of Congress would be easier to read. Unskilled people in law like me look at the destruction of in the Capitol as obvious. Having some people walk between the ropes does not mean there was no violence. Joe Biden has gotten hell for a few documents, but Trump takes so much that it takes a lot of time to inventory. It seems like the quantity was his best strategy for delay. You have more knowledge of law than I. Feel free to tell me where I'm wrong. Well, it's not that you're wrong, Lee. It's just that if there's 15,000 pages of documents and 14,999 of them are damning or meaningless, but one, just one document is exculpatory to the defendant, well, you have to go through all of those, all of that hay to find that one needle. Because otherwise the prosecution will not stand. A conviction will not stand. Now, why the Southern District of New York sat on it for so long? Here, Flavio, let me add another variable. What if it's not corruption per se? What if this has something to do with the lack of action of, well, Merrick the Meek? Right? Maybe? You think? Possibly? I'm not saying I have any knowledge. But we do know that going all the way back to the January 6th committee hearings, there was a distinct lack of trust between the January 6th committee and the DOJ. Because, of course, the DOJ, we found out some time back that, who was it, Rod Rosenstein? Or was it someone else who said that he had to go and take a cup of warm milk with him to soothe the frayed nerves of the maggots in the FBI. And these were like managerial level people, and they were maggots inside the DOJ who thought and probably still think that their orange genius is somehow being persecuted. Just another thing to consider, to ponder. Oh, and by the way, we are about 15 minutes away from going over the river and through the trees to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Orcs. Uh, I amuse me. And let me encourage you. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, jump right in. Use the button there at the top of headon.live. Get into the conversation. Say howdy. And bring on the various and sundry issues that you'd like to discuss. Once again, an open call for women's voices. Please. This out of Massachusetts, or as we said in Alabama, Massachusetts. Oh, wait, let's go back. Ron and Raleigh says impropriety. I'm not a lawyer, but my brother is, so I'm going to run this by him. It seems to me as a non-lawyer that there should be some sort of advantage or something to bring a case to recuse a prosecutor. How does a relationship between two legal associates cause a defendant a disadvantage? The law is fucked up. I guess none of these Trump-appointed judges have the appearance of impropriety when they find every reason to obfuscate and delay. Oh, but they do! Aileen Cannon is a walking appearance of impropriety. Clarence pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas every morning when he rolls over and says, "Good morning, my insurrectionist darling," is engaged in the appearance, well, no, actual impropriety. The standard, the fact that it's not enforced against a member of the Supreme Court does not mean that the standard is wrong. And the appearance of impropriety of, you know, doing the nasty with your coworker, actually your subordinate, it makes people go, "Huh?" And not just maggots. You shouldn't do that. So. You said there should be some sort of advantage or something to bring a case to recuse a prosecutor. Lawyers are required to act in good faith. In other words, their signature on a document, and it's codified in the rules of civil procedure at Rule 11 on a federal level. But a signature is supposed to certify that the argument or the document, the filing, is being made in good faith and not for any improper purpose such as harassment or delay. Everything Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers do is for purposes of harassment and delay, but these are not civil proceedings. And judges are loath to use the powers of Rule 11 unless they're, and that's, again, civil context. I can't remember my crim pro well enough to know if there's a similar law, rule of crim pro. But in a criminal case, you can just about plead anything you want to, because a criminal defendant's liberty is at stake. Even if it's Nitwit Nero. And so the Constitution is going to afford every reasonable avenue for a defense counsel to zealously and vigorously defend their client. Does that make any sense, Ron? But the important thing here is that Fannie Willis was not, the judge did not find her to have engaged in actual impropriety, which was the nature of the complaint raised in the motion by Nitwit Nero and his cronies' defense. They sought the dismissal outright of every count of the indictment. They did not get that. They did not even get a finding that the DA had behaved with impropriety, but merely that there was an appearance thereof that was not fatal to the case, but did require one or the other of them to step aside. I feel like Judge McAfee gave Fannie Willis as much of a win as he could conceivably give. Ron continues and says, they may, but nobody's asking Fappy or Aileen to step down. Still sounds like bullshit to me. Oh, Ron, there are cries across the fruited plain for Fappy to step down. I mean, God, he's even getting sued now for failing to report his friendly gifts and failing to disclose them on his taxes. That was sufficient to take down Al Capone. Girl can wish, girl can dream. And as to Aileen Cannon, no, Jack Smith has not filed a petition to recuse because he thinks that he can win this case if he has to try it before Barron, with the Honorable Barron fucking Trump presiding. The case is that strong, and a motion to recuse will only slow the process down. Now, on the other hand, Fappy, the calls for his recusal are coming from inside the Senate and inside the House. And that's not just, you know, some pixel-stained wretch out there clacking away at their keyboard. We're talking about people like Sheldon Whitehouse, Jamie Raskin, and others. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much to our dear sister Jessica. $10 for yesterday's Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge and another 10 for my shitty morning. Our beautiful little girl, our leopard gecko, Freckles, passed away yesterday or this morning, and I didn't discover her until this morning when I lifted her limp, unresponsive body out of her vivarium this morning to take her to the vet. So that $10 is in memory of Freckles, who brought us much happiness in her too short life. Oh, Jessica, I'm so sorry. Please, please pass my condolences to Susan as well. That's just too much of that going around. I'm so sorry, but thank you for jumping in on the challenge. So we've got $205 to go on Gino's Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge. And Speed of the Lizard God. The Freckles. Poor little gecko. Reptiles can be very good pets. I have a friend down in South Carolina, Stan, and she keeps some sort of, just referred to as some sort of dragon. She told me once that he just sits there guilt staring at her. How can you tell? Oh, a mother knows. And so, you know, Jessica turned her $20 into $40 via the Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge. And you can too, up to $205. And that would be more helpful than you know, and it would be great if we could. So that would take care of Monday and part of Tuesday, and Friday's done. And so that would leave $1,200 to go. Thank you, Gino. And thank you, kind anonymous internet friend. And thank you, Jessica. So, like I said, this story out of Massachusetts, as we ponder, for instance, the ongoing horror that was the, for all intents and purposes, lynching of Next Benedict. Well, six young assholes from Southwick, Massachusetts, about 104 miles southwest of Boston, have been charged with engaging in racial online bullying. It's been described as hateful, racist online Snapchat behavior. It happened between February 8th and February 9th. It's also the behavior has also been, the acts have also been called heinous. And these six little assholes, well, they held an online mock, oh Jesus, not this again, slave auction. Hampton District Attorney Anthony Galluni, not Giuliani, said he found out about it on February the 15th and immediately picked up the blower and gave a shout out to the Massachusetts State Police Detective Unit. The investigation concluded on Thursday, and the detective unit and the chief of the juvenile court unit pursued criminal charges against the juveniles. They were charged with a threat to commit a crime. Two of them were also charged with interference with civil rights. One of the two additionally charged with witness interference. District Attorney Galluni said hatred and racism have no place in this community. This language is always so problematic because obviously it found a place now, didn't it? And where this behavior becomes criminal, I will ensure that we act and act with swift resolve, as we did here, to uncover it and bring it to the light of justice. There's no question that the alleged behavior of these six juveniles is vile, cruel, and contemptible. Well, if only there was a District Attorney Galluni in Owosso, Oklahoma, right? Those kids may even be adults or near enough adults to be tried as adults for bashing poor Nex's head into the hard floor of the girls' bathroom at that godforsaken high school. District Attorney Galluni said, and the kids have not been criminally charged, and the school district, acting all butthurt, said, it is unfair to claim that there has been no disciplinary action with regard to these students. Yeah, fuck you and your disciplinary action, Owosso school superintendent asshole person. Turn them over to the cops. And again, the cops probably won't act either. It is, after all, Oklahoma Stan. Galluni continued and said he's met with the victims and their families. As I have described, through the work of my office's investigators and the work in court yet to come, we intend to appropriately punish those whose alleged behavior displayed a capacity for such hatred and cruelty and ultimately amounted to chargeable criminal conduct. It was a group of eighth grade assholes from Southwick Regional School. The kids engaged in expressions of hateful and racist comments, including notions of violence toward people of color, racial slurs, derogatory pictures and videos, and a mock slave auction directed at two particular juveniles. On an emergency basis, the six charged were suspended on February 12th. 3 days later, more students were formally suspended. Two got a 25-day suspension. One got a 45-day suspension. And the district attorney said he was acting to prevent future harm, encourage empathy, and build stronger communities free of hate. Good for you. Good for you, district attorney. Nothing remotely resembling the same can be said of Oklahoma Stan. Because apparently Massachusetts cares enough to not want students to be bullied to death. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned the statement that was put out by President and Mrs. President and Dr. Biden, Roxanne, offering condolences upon the death of Nex Benedict by well, lynching and bullying. And lo and behold, the superintendent of schools of Oklahomistan, that shitbird Ryan Walters, well, he went on X and posted an excrement about it and quote tweeted the statement and accused Dr. Biden and President Biden of politicizing the death of a child, but of course could not use the proper pronouns to describe Next Benedict, and in fact refused to use any pronouns at all. He got ratioed somewhere out past the orbit of Pluto, which will always be a planet to me. Darlene in Connecticut says, the fact pattern is messed up. I now hear that the original subpoena by the Manhattan DA's office went to Trump's DOJ with Bill Barr at the helm. That's why the subpoena was ignored. However, I've not heard anything about Alvin Bragg or his office following up with the DOJ under Garland. And, of course, remember when Alvin Bragg took office, he had two hotshot prosecutors who hit the bricks on him because they said that he lacked the nerve to really go after Trump. Darlene adds, but I heard that Bragg claims he requested the documents a year ago. Was that the only request or the follow-up? So I don't know what to think. With 15,000 to 30,000 documents or pages and possibly 10,000 more on the way, I read 100,000 plus 15,000. Again, it's unclear. You have to give the defense the time they need to review everything, no matter how odious that defendant may be. Amen. Hear, hear. Darlene probably actually paid attention in law school. There's blaming on Trump for delaying until January a request for those documents as well. When he did request them, the DOJ responded, I guess. Simply put, I do not have a clear understanding of what the damn facts are in this screw-up. Suffice it to say, Trump is capitalizing to delay to 90 days, so you say Marchand ruled 30 days. If Trump can do an interlocutory appeal to ask for 90 days, sure as shit, and he will. I have no doubt whatsoever, Darlene. You are right across the board. And if there was substantial delay by Bill Barr's office, well, he is Bill Pelham Barr to prosecution, isn't he? Again, crooked as the dog's hind leg. Dirty as the day is long. But it would be beneficial if we could find that out. Ron and Raleigh. The Scheme. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse has posted a 29-part series of videos called The Scheme. The law couldn't find Trump in violation of the Emoluments Clause when it was as plain as the spray tans on Trump's ass. The judicial system is set up to throw mostly black men in private prison. Imagine if anyone filed this sort of case against Barack Obama, his black ass would be in jail fast and quick, fast and in a hurry. You're probably not wrong. Some of these issues, however, stem from the fact that they are cases of first impression. And on a case of first impression, it's anybody's guess how a court will rule and how the appellate court will rule above and how the Supreme Court will rule ultimately. That's why I find so much of this potentially terrifying. Because long before there was Trump, there was Richard Nixon, Ron, and I know you remember, telling David Frost, well, if the president does it, it's not illegal. And there are people with real, live, frameable, suitable for framing law degrees from highfalutin, high and mighty law firms who make that same argument. And arguably in the past, that's kind of how the presidency operated, wasn't it? Wasn't it always a matter of providing the president plausible deniability while his underlings did things that would put any of us under the jail? Let's see. The CIA tried to poison Fidel Castro with Itching powder in a dive suit? Or, well, then there was the exploding cigar. There's the assassination of Allende, the coup against Allende. There's the coup against Mohammad Mossadegh. God alone knows who has been, the number of people who have been extrajudicially slaughtered. And the president kept plausibly, deniably above the wet work of the fray. We tried to codify that that can't happen anymore. But the problem is, as it always is in anything that bills itself as being even remotely a democracy, and of course with us it's aspirational, more aspirational than operational, that whole making a more perfect union thing, but laws only work if people believe in them and are willing to uphold them. And I wish I wasn't saying that. We have crossed into the second hour of the program, and so it is consequently time to go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Munchkins and see what's on folks' minds. Exploding Cigar, Lee in New York says, do the Looney Tunes characters work at the CIA? There is an argument to be made, Lee. There absolutely is. Emilio asking the same thing. Who headed the CIA? Back then, Acme President Wile E. Coyote, Exploding Cigar for... I know. And let me make sure that we're connected. I mean, we're connected, but I got it. Yeah. There's wires. And Matt in San Francisco, 45. You know, considering how many people he's screwed over throughout his life, it's kind of baffling that no one has dealt out some swift street justice on his rotund ass. Legally and peacefully, of course, Agent Fred. Yes, always, legally and peacefully. Well, for most of his rotten life, misbegotten life, misanthropic life, he has been Rollo Tomasi, the man who always gets away with it. Ides of March special, Dave and the Blind says, in honor of Donald John Trump, also known as Julius Geezer, that stabbing pain in the ass, we have Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium, and we would like to announce a giveaway. Yes, we're giving away one of our custom-made heavy-duty pogo sticks that are rated for the John Hagee crowd, normally $10,000, but if you're a maggot Republican, a neo-Nazi, or just a self-hating gay black man who likes voting Republican, your cost will be the low price of $50,000. Now, that's a Republican discount. By the way, the gang down at the shop says, hey, Roxanne, Gladys is out baking up some more of her famous cookies for a church social this weekend. Your buddy Dave and the Blind. P.S. Happy Ides of March and have a great St. Patrick's Day weekend. Yes, well, I'm going to celebrate tomorrow by going to a county Democratic convention. Oh, Cynthia, hi. Just back now from Costco. Oh, rub it in. I ain't got a Costco and within a four or five hour drive. Mm-hmm. Just got back now from Costco where I bought a big package of their St. Louis-style ribs. I don't have time to deal with them at all today, but I hope to smoke them, or rather half of them, on Sunday. For now, I need to take my... And the message fades away. Cynthia, tell us you're okay. Hit the wrong key. Okay. I was trying to write that spring has hit with a vengeance today, and I desperately need to get into the yard and do a massive amount of trimming and weeding. I'll stream the show later, though. Well, we're always glad to... any time you decide to be part of the program, you're always welcome, sis. Massive amount of trimming and weeding. Ooh. That, I think I just broke a sweat thinking about it. If you have any questions, as you do get around, are you just going to rub them, or are you going to... Not a word, Matt! You going to put rub on them, or are you going to try to brine them? And don't forget to take off that annoying membrane there on the back side of the... I mean it, Matt! On the back side of the ribs. They're going to be delicious, and I know it. So, like I said, when I get back from the Democratic Convention tomorrow, the fire gets built, and the ribs go on. And Cynthia, did you get your rib rack yet? Those are so handy. And then when they're almost done, you take them off the rack, you set them on the grill, you paint them with your sauce, and let it just bake a little bit, and then wrap them up, let them rest, and then you're ready to go. And as soon as people start smelling that hickory smoke, it's California after all, the ones who aren't absolutely convinced that everything's on fire again, and call the fire department or the police. Well, the ones who recognize the smell of smoke will become good friends and neighbors very quickly, without a doubt. Okay, so like I said, we're down to $205 to go on the Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge, courtesy of Gina. And it'd be great if we can knock that down in the next hour and get after a little bit of the rest of the hole that we're in from the entire week being unfunded. This is a chance to get a couple of days of it funded. Let's run over and check in the old holler tree. Hey, guys.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy. Those were some lovely looking little sprouts you got going there, Roger.
Well, that's when you go back down to the kids' place and steal the trailer back and stop by a nice little outfit called Territorial Seed and walk into their greenhouse and pick up 2-4 packs of cauliflower, 2-4 packs of broccoli, and 1-6 pack of lettuce that had a total of 17 plants in it. So I got 8 cauliflowers, 8 broccolis, and 17 heads of lettuce planted today, and got some lawn mowed and all the rest of it.
No Brussels sprouts?
No, Brussels sprouts take too fucking long.
They do. They do, for a fact.
The thing is that if I get the cauliflower and broccoli in early, then those beds get used for a second round later this summer and get a fall crop in. If I put in Brussels sprouts, I wouldn't be eating them till Christmas.
That is a little exaggeration, isn't it?
Not much.
I was afraid of that.
But, no, I mean, by the time the Brussels sprouts harvest, they don't really taste good until you get a frost.
I didn't know that.
They taste much, much better after a frost. So you want to leave them until you get that first nippy frost of fall, which around here is late October, early November. And that's much too late to think about putting in anything else. And because I'm so limited on my space, I'm always looking. I mean, my tomatoes and my peppers, you know, I got to let them have the whole time. But virtually everything else I try to put in to where I can get 2 crops out of my garden every year.
That's fantastic.
Which is the reason for the hoop house, because we had frost this morning. But inside the hoop house, they're fine. But anyhow, That's what caused me to be a little bit late getting into the chat room today, but I knew I could get done, well, pretty much done. There's still a little bit of mowing I didn't get done, but tomorrow's supposed to be a nice day, too. So I have just a little teeny tiny patch left to do. But it's the weedy part of the garden, or the lawn, so I really don't worry about it. Leave the dandelions for the bees, because there's not much else for them to gather pollen from this time of year.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Our pollen counts are starting to go up because the nut trees and all the other trees are starting to shed a lot of pollen. So the hazelnuts and the maples are shedding pollen, and the oaks are starting to shed pollen. Some of the flowering fruit trees are starting to show up, so the bees will have stuff to chew on in, you know, another week or two.
So does the pollen that they harvest from things like what you're describing, does that affect the flavor of their honey, or do you just not know? I mean, is this honey that gets collected, or is this just theirs?
I don't know. I don't have bees. Don't know any beekeepers here.
So you're just being nice to them on principle.
Yeah, because they're starting to come out because our temperature is getting up around 60 during the day. So they're out flying around, particularly the solitary mason bees. They're starting to be out and about.
Is that what I call carpenter bees?
Oh, I don't know.
They kind of look like bumblebees?
I'm not even sure what my daughter-in-law's the bee freak, but well, she's nature freak. Anyhow, we had a home show and I was talking to one of the master gardeners there, and I was, you know, helping to run the booth, and he was saying that the mason bees are starting to come out. The mason bees are the ones you can go down to your local garden store and buy a box with a bunch of tubes in it that are a solitary bee. They don't build a hive and make honey and that kind of thing as much. What they do is they find some place to lay an egg, and they deposit honey there so that when the grub hatches out next year, the grub's got something to chew on or, you know, eat until they start flying, and then they find a mate, and then they do some, you know, more solitary bees around the place. But they are a incredible pollinator, particularly in urban areas, because they lay their eggs and the eggs winter over, and then they hatch out in the springtime and start pollinating stuff. So, you know, it's just one of those things to help keep the diversity of life going in an urban area. And that way I don't have to have a beehive and take care of it and worry about mites and all the rest of that stuff. And, you know, when the lavender starts to blossom, I'd go out and look at all the different bees, and my daughter-in-law identified something like 7 or 8 different varieties of bees that come through my yard.
Now, one of my goals is to get somebody into my little half acre, three quarters of an acre that doesn't have the house and yard on it, with a brush hog, and just cut everything down so that I can actually mow it and, well, maybe at some point in time have a garden again if I can keep the deer out.
Well, I don't have any problems with deer. They like the golf course too much.
Yeah, I need a golf. That's what I need. I need a golf course, Roger. Emilio's got the paranoids now. Not Freemason bees. Yes, Freemason bees.
Yeah, they're free. Anyhow, no, there's a golf course. Well, across the street's an apartment complex. Behind the apartment complex is a golf course. But the people that live on the hill on the other side of the street, not too far away, they have problems with the deer. I don't. Of course, you know, when you got 8-foot fences all the way around your property, you don't have deer coming in.
No, that's a big jump even for a deer.
Yeah. But 4-foot, it's no problem at all.
Oh, four foot's just, that's just a playground.
Well, but the other side of it, if you have a 4-foot fence and about 3 feet inside the fence, you have a creek. They don't jump the fence because they'd fall in the creek. So
wait, now I need a 4-foot fence and a fucking moat, Roger? Really?
Yeah. That's what I had down in California.
Yeah, with some.
If I left.
And in the moat, some sharks with frickin' laser beams.
No, I don't need sharks, but no, if I left the gate open, they'd come down the driveway and munch on the snow peas and things like that. But if the gate was closed, I got up one day, I'll close the gate. Okay, I forgot it. You know, and then all of a sudden I find out I got deer in my garden and I'm trying to chase them out, but they wouldn't even jump. I mean, they could have jumped the creek and the fence in one leap, but they wouldn't even do that. I had to open the gate and then herd them to the gate to get them to leave. I mean, I didn't mind it when the guy came to visit. Nice little fork and horn. The next, I don't know, about 3 or 4 days later, he brought 2 wives with him. And I decided that was just too much. So
Mormon deer.
Yeah. So he ended up hanging in my barn, and I chased his wives out, let him go find somebody else to play with. That's the one time it's been so long now they can't bust before. Besides that, I'm not in the state anymore. But I was out of state and firing a rifle in it and within 500 yards of an inhabited dwelling. And I don't know how many crimes I committed that day, but by God, he tasted good.
Yes, he did. Back the last time, and it was years ago now, when they ate my garden, I think it was 72 chili pepper plants, and I joked that I had jerky on the hoof, and all I had to do was take them down and wouldn't have to, you know, season them or anything. Old bastards.
Well, they hit me that one time they did get in on my snow peas. They cost me about $300 in snow peas.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, I was growing 50-foot rows of snow peas.
Yeah, they're rats with antlers.
Yeah. But anyhow, Irish Dave and I were exchanging information in the other chat. Did the election interference case in New York get postponed 30, 60, or 90 days?
No, that's not the election interference case. That's the hush money case.
But that's
in New York.
I'm being a little bit nitpicky here. Yeah, people want to call it hush money, but what was the hush money for?
Election interference. Okay, fair
enough. Election interference.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You got me there. It got 30 days.
30. Okay, because I thought I heard on the radio earlier that Donnie wanted 90, and the DA wanted 30, and the judge split the difference.
Not according to the breaking news from Washington Post and New York Times that I saw. It's 30 days.
Okay, well, maybe I was half asleep and somebody was prognosticating.
So that would be roughly April 24th.
Too bad it's not April 15th, because I think that would be an appropriate day.
Oh, today would have been the most appropriate day.
Well, no, 6 months ago would have been the most appropriate.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, Ides of March and all, and Julius Geyser.
Yeah. Now, I want to know if I can file a complaint with the court for them delaying my right to a speedy trial.
You don't have that right.
I'm a citizen of the country. Aren't people entitled to a speedy trial?
No, the defendant is.
I'm being a little bit asshole-ish. But, you know, come on. This is getting ridiculous. We know
I like the argument being made by media that there should be cameras in the courtroom because it otherwise deprives the people of the United States of their ability to access a courtroom that is open to all persons.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Well, it went down like a paralyzed falcon.
Yeah, well, the Hindenburg made out of lead.
A Led Zeppelin, and that's where the band got its name. When they announced the lineup, you know, Jimmy Page, etc., and said they were cutting an album. Oh, that's going to go over like a Led Zeppelin And behold, the band's name was born.
Good way for it to happen.
Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco, weeding, because Matt's not that far from Cynthia. There was finally enough of a weather break for me to get out and weed the backyard on Wednesday, filled an entire garbage bin full. Took about 4 hours. Roxanne, you get a pass in the rubbing your meat today. Well, thank you and peace and blessings upon you. Cynthia added, for now I'm going to rub them. This will be an experiment and experience for me. Yes, I bought the rib rack. I don't have that Dreamland sauce yet. And for this first-time effort, I'll use up the barbecue sauce I have. Thank you for all your help with it. Now I'm out in the yard. Soak up the sunshine, Cynthia. I'm jealous. It's the sky is once again about 15 inches over the top above the top of my head. Rubbing it in. Here we go. Ron and Raleigh. Roxy, I can walk to my Costco and my Trader Joe's. You know how to hurt a girl. I'd have to plan the children of Israel's crossing of Sinai to go to Costco. Nearest one I can think of is probably either in Kentucky or, I'm pretty sure there's one in Pittsburgh. Columbus, maybe. And I've been to the one in Manassas, Virginia. It was a wondrous experience.
I'd like to second your number about ripping off that membrane on the inside of the ribs.
You got to. It's annoying as shit, but you got to.
Well, there is one way around not doing it. And that is if you've got a super hot fire when you put them on, that membrane will crack as it begins to cook. But I don't like cooking my ribs that hot.
No, that's a disaster in the making.
Yeah, I'm a low and slow.
That's about the only way to do it. And, if you've done it enough, and I'm sure you know, there's kind of a trick to it. If you can find a corner where you can just get it started. And then if the goddess is with you, it'll just peel off in a sheet. But you just have to be kind of... slow and meticulous with it.
Well, I find getting that corner, whatever corner you can find, and then taking a piece of paper towel to help hold onto the membrane.
Yes, absolutely.
And then if you've got a really good, nice, sharp knife, when you get it started, you can just kind of tweak with the tip of the knife blade, and you can run it off that way. You know, because if you pull too hard, it'll tear.
Exactly.
But if you just take the tip of the knife blade, you can cut those little fibers that come up, and it's not too bad.
No,
you need that paper towel to grab onto.
And the other thing is, if they're good and cold right out of the fridge, that membrane comes off more easily than if it's come to room temperature and become kind of, well, greasy and slippery.
All kinds of tips and tricks you learn on this program.
You should talk. You're the one to talk. I mean, Zimmergist, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Master Gardener Extraordinaire. I've learned more from you than you'll ever pick up from me.
Well, and then my wife is the chef. Last night we had a Peruvian number called Butifarra, which is a pork loin that gets boiled in some concoction of herbs and spices. And then you have ají amarillo, fresh peppers, which came out of the freezer, and a green onion, kind of a salad-y kind of thing. And you take your bread roll and you stir it with a little mayonnaise and a little ají amarillo pepper sauce. And then put the onions on it and put the thinly sliced Peruvian ham, those pork loins that she has some magic thing that she boils them in. And then put some more hot sauce on it and put a piece of lettuce on it.
Oh, God. That sounds...
And then for... appetizer kind of salad, we had the home canned tuna with the pepper sauce, mixed up with chopped onions and a little bit of whatever else she puts into it that makes it great, and had that on crackers. So I kind of starved myself last night.
Oh, know? As well you should have, in anticipation of that. Yeah, I mean, that's,
Yeah.
And it's funny, the goddess of irony tweaks my little tomato nose. I was talking yesterday about how, you know, if you buy baby back ribs, you're ripping yourself off because you're paying more money for it. Well, it turned out today up at the Wiggling Pig, two slabs of full ribs were $30. I'd gotten the previous ones for like 15 because they were on sale. But the baby back ribs were on sale for like $2 a pound. So we now have four slabs to go on tomorrow. They will get their rubbing after the show. So there'll be two St. Louis style two St. Louis style slabs and two baby back slabs.
Well, I don't know what she's got me primed up for, but the smoker's ready to go and the barbecue's ready. She just tells me what to cook, and I go do it.
Key to a happy marriage.
And then I do have another batch of sourdough rising right now that I'll bake tonight or tomorrow.
So. Matt in San Francisco, Putifara. Sounds like some kind of Latin fun you'd need lube for. You're the one that got my mind in the gutter, Roxanne. Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. Actually, it's the goddess. The goddess of irony, you know, she just possesses me, and I'm her mouthpiece.
Let me see if I can get a link to what that is.
Meanwhile, I said going down like a paralyzed falcon, and Jude said, what a visceral expression as these simply flow out of you, and what that powerful falcon must be experiencing if that were to be true, dear Robin. Yeah, it's just a long, fuck, you know, all the way into the dirt. Sorry.
Okay.
Jeez. So we've reached the halfway point of the program, and $205 remains on Gino's Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge. And golly, can we please meet that? It would be so wonderful if we could, because, well, bills, middle of the month. There it is. Okay, thank you, Roger. The Peruvian Butifara. Yeah, Butifara. Matt, Butifara is a type of sandwich, a section of baguette, or a type of bread roll called pan francés, stuffed with jamón del país, country ham, and salsa criolla, creole sauce, with lettuce and mustard or mayonnaise or other condiments. You know, it's interesting. I thought it might be a criolla sauce.
It's a street food as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, the vendors will be selling anticuchos and butifarra and cold chard pastry and things of that sort around the markets and on the streets. And it's, you know, it's sort of like some people like fried eggs for dinner or something because it's feel-good food. You know, everybody's got their... Like
but this, but this
kind
is,
of my feel
but,
good
but this
because
is,
Mom used to make it.
But this is like it starts the way Patricia makes it with a pork loin or a pork roast.
Well, we use pork loin. I would imagine they use the pork roast, you know, because they're bigger and all that. But she'll get a pork loin and then make the country ham from that, and then. You know, we don't use up a whole pork loin for dinner.
Yeah, well, I asked because Ralph's looked it up, being the Horn ad hoc Peruvian street food research department this evening, and what she found is more of it's more like a sausage.
Well, there is a sausage, but that's not. I've never seen a sausage in Peru. I've always seen the sliced ham number, but
yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't exist because I mean when I lived down there, the vast majority of my time was spent in a little village, might have had 200 people normally, maybe 400 or 500 on the Sunday market. No electricity, no running water, out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Okay, and there it is at the bottom of the Wikipedia entry. In Peruvian cuisine, the word butifarra is used for a particular kind of ham sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, jamón del país.
Ham of the country. And in Peru, it's Peruvian ham.
Anyway, any way you slice it, it sounds delicious.
Hell yeah. But again, this village I was living in Peru, where I spent most of my time, that we had lots of chuño and tunta, which are the freeze-dried potatoes. And when I went to the restaurant, it was, you know, the restaurant where the single police officers lived, ate. They served breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You just walked in, you paid your 50 cents to a dollar, depending on what it was, and they served a meal. There was no menu. You walked in and you ate what they were serving that day. So my Peruvian cuisine was rather limited, unless I was, you know, down in Lima or something, and then, of course, all the fancy restaurants.
Now, didn't you tell me once that you didn't care, because I've always been curious about the freeze-dried potatoes. Didn't you tell me once that you didn't care for those?
I don't care for them at all. For me, they were like eating sand.
Wow.
Well, see, one of the problems is that at 12,500 feet, water boils somewhere shy of 190 degrees. And none of the starches cook. I mean, you really can't do spaghetti. Because you can't get the noodles to cook. And if you just try to boil a potato, it just never gets cooked. And so they take the potatoes and they spread them out. And at night they freeze. And then when the sun comes out, at that area, yes, you can have liquid water and ice. And it's not down at the triple point where it goes directly from ice to vapor. Without going through a water phase, but they freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw, and pretty soon they're dehydrated potatoes, and they'll last forever. But then when they go to cook them, they just warm them up, and it's sort of like eating raw potato with grits that have never really rehydrated, and I never could get used to them. And there are other people, oh my God, they're great. No, I don't think so. But then, you know, maybe the people didn't wash their feet before they stomped on them to break them up in the morning, and I was eating dirt. I don't know. You got to, if you're going to live like I was living down there, you got to be adventuresome. You just eat what they give you, and, you know, that's it. It's like I don't know whether I've told it here or not, the story. I was down in Arequipa one day, and I didn't have a whole lot of money, so I saw the special of the day. 10 soles, which was 20 cents or thereabouts. So I ordered it, and it was a guinea pig, which in and of itself didn't taste bad, but the guinea pig they served me, it looked like it had been trying to run out of the cage, and they dropped a cement block on it and splayed it out, and the teeth were on the head, and the claws were still on the feet, and the tail, I mean, they'd skinned it, so it didn't have fur on it. But it just was a splayed out guinea pig. And I was so broke when they brought it out to me. It looked uglier than hell, but well, I'm going to eat it because I ordered it. And I ate it, and that's fine, but I've not eaten it again because I just don't think cooey tasted all that great. And it brings back the memory of this large gopher with its big teeth staring up at me from the plate. Well, Jeremy's got to come on and tell us about how Mike Pence grew a pair.
Yeah, Lou mentioned that Mike Pence will not be endorsing Nitwit Nero. Speak up, Jeremy.
Basically just said in good conscience he cannot endorse cannot endorse Donald Trump. I guess it's a little late, but hey, better than never.
Yeah, well, yeah. And let's wander around. Go ahead.
It's only 3 1/4 years since he tried to get hung by his former frontman. So
hey, let's stop. Jeremy, let's stop feeding material to Matt in San Francisco. Almost got hanged. Okay. Mother does not approve of anyone referring to her hubby being hung.
Okay.
I just figured I'd try to get out in front of that. Well, that's going to be problematic too, isn't it? Never mind.
Yep.
Hi, Christopher.
Hey, how are you? Happy Friday, porn family.
Happy St. Patrick's
Day weekend.
Happy
Friday, people.
Happy Ides of March and happy St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. That's right. My dad's birthday. Is St. Patrick's Day. And he's not even Irish. Tell me how that works.
And so what, Thursday will be the first day of spring?
Yeah, Thursday.
Yep. Yay, I've got therapy on the first day of spring. Oh, by the way, just in terms of program notes and everything, mark this in advance. I will be away from the microphone April the 8th and April the 9th. And on April the 8th, I hope the eclipse will be visible where I'm going. I don't know though. And I hope we have good weather.
That's a Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
I personally know someone who still remembers the last eclipse that was in this region. It was 1934. My grandmother, she was 12. This year she's 101.
Oh my heavens, that's wonderful, Jeremy. Will she be able to watch it?
She should be able to, because it's supposed to pass right through northern Vermont to that section. It's funny, because southern Vermont will see partial eclipse, but 50 miles or so each way, you'll see the full thing. They're expecting upwards of 120,000 extra people in Burlington that day. Well, not to mention people who are going to stop on the interstate in the path of it. It's going to cause chaos that day.
Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet. Well, I will be in Durham, North Carolina. So I haven't seen yet whether or not that's going to be visible that far south.
I believe it starts in totality somewhere in Texas.
Yes, Texas.
And winds its way across the country and ends up out of Vermont.
I'll be in Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags territory to watch the eclipse. I've got a friend in Arkansas.
You've got a friend?
Supposed to be over. Yeah, got a friend.
Pay him well?
And never been to Arkansas. Well, where are the Ozarks? Are they in Arkansas or Missouri?
Both.
So maybe I was in Arkansas.
Well, if you're going to be, you're going to be near Bug Tussle and Siler's Swamp and Pixley and all of that.
Yeah, my friend said you better bring your MAGA hat. And I said I blew it up with some Tannerite. I'm going to keep my mouth fucking shut when I'm down there. But I'll be down there for 10 days, and they're supposed to get 4 minutes of totality in the path where we're going to be.
Well, I'm really excited about this trip coming up. Terribly, terribly, terribly excited. Maybe I shouldn't even be mentioning this. I have a surgical consult to get my face done. And it's going to be, I can't wait. Get rid of the, I've waited, well, I'm at 3.5 years now, and I've given the chemical aspect of it plenty of time, and so now the surgeon's going to look at me and tell me what she can do for me to erase any remaining vestiges of masculinity from my face.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're going to get rid of this cave woman brow bone, hopefully. And, what it boils down to, and it's kind of terrifying to say, if all goes as planned, they're going to peel my face off and work on my bones for a little bit and put my face back on.
Katie approve of this procedure?
I didn't know I had to ask her. I mean, but...
Sarcasm.
It'll be terrible. Yeah, I'm sure.
Did they use a chimpanzee for that?
Yeah. Christopher.
Only for Michael Jackson.
That's the only way I know how you get your face peeled off.
No, there are other more delicate possibilities, but... yeah, mainly my forehead and my hairline and my brow bone and around my eyes and get some of the squareness off of my jaw. And then, actually, it's a matter of her telling me what she can do. But it's covered under insurance, and so knowing... And this is the real motivating factor for it all. Knowing what... The Heritage Foundation has already said are their plans and within their Project 2025 Nightmare for America scenario. I have to do as much as I can in the coming before January as humanly possible, because if shit goes sideways, it may become absolutely impossible in 2025. Stop
willing into an existence. It's not going to happen. He's not getting back in. It's not fucking happening.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. Thank you for that manifestation.
If Mike Pence is saying he cannot vote for Trump, you know damn good and well there's a bunch of other outrageously conservative assholes that aren't going to vote for Trump either. And I don't care whether they vote for Biden or not. They can vote for rotted FK for all I care. Although Pence apparently says he's not going to vote for the third party. So he's just not going to vote for president. Well, that's denying 45 a vote. And that's all that's needed is to deny him a vote.
Precisely.
And yet my elementary school friend is still 100% down with Donnie.
Oh, some of them so are. And I saw an article today, just a little bit before airtime, saying that the threat from rotted FK is real.
To Biden?
Well, I didn't delve into it, but... everything I'm reading says that he's more of a draw away from Nitwit Nero.
That's what it
seems like to me, too, right?
I'll
anti-vax crowd, right?
The anti-vax crowd. Anybody who is a Democrat, I mean, I'm not talking fanatic Democrat. I'm not talking Bernie Sanders Democrat. I'm talking just a run-of-the-mill Democrat is so fucking scared. They're pissed off at the Supreme Court. They're pissed off at the judge in Florida. They're pissed off at the entire conservative movement that is taking rights away left, right, and center in this country, that they are motivated to vote. And all Donnie's got to do is just piss off a few more of his used-to-be supporters, a la Mike Pence, and he's toast. The Republican Party is not doing a goddamn thing to get new people. They're depending upon their dyed-in-the-wool, red hat-wearing, gold tennis shoe-wearing, flag-waving Trump 24 jerks. And I don't know, my next-door neighbor, when we moved in here, he had that Trump sign in his yard because the election was over. We moved up here like in 2017, but he still had his 2016 Trump sign out there. And he did not put out a Trump sign in 2020. And I can't believe that if he didn't put it out in 2020, that he's going to be voting. I can't walk up to him and ask him because I don't want to piss off my next door neighbor. Okay. I don't want to get into politics.
No, no.
But the fact is, I mean, I know he had a sign out for 2016, but he didn't have it out in 2020. Trump's done absolutely nothing in 2020, since 2020, to get his vote back. Trump's not looking for new people. He's just trying to consolidate his base. And his base didn't give him the popular vote ever. So I'm with Jeremy on this. I don't think Trump's going to, and I think he's going to be convicted before November of something.
That's a big deal. That changes polling numbers drastically.
It absolutely does, Christopher. By the way, going back to the eclipse for just a second, Walker just wrote in and said, Horn family, if you're anywhere close, cancel everything else and experience it, the eclipse. Worth it.
I have another suggestion. If you can get into a park where there are some trees, where the sun can shine through the trees and leave little splotches of sunlight on a sidewalk or something like that, get close to that. Because when the eclipse happens, right, very close to totality, those little gaps in the leaves act like a lens. And on the sidewalk, you will see a scattering of the image of the moon crossing in front of the sun.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just an amazing sight. Because when it came through here a couple of years back, up in Corvallis, it was total. Here in Eugene, it wasn't. So because the kid teaches there at Corvallis, he knew where the lawn was going to be and the chair set up and the astronomers were going to be out talking to people and all that. So we drove up there for the total eclipse. And the one thing, it didn't get as dark as I thought it was going to get, but okay. And the birds didn't sing like I thought they were going to sing, but okay. But when I saw that display, and I didn't have a camera phone at the time, all the little eclipse images on the sidewalk was what blew my mind away. And one of the reasons that it changed me, God, I think it was somewhere around 1917, 1920, somewhere in that neighborhood, there was a total eclipse that crossed, and if you know the geography of the Bay Area, it was total on Mount Tamalpais, but it wasn't total in San Francisco. And my grandmother took my mother and her brother and sister, and they took the ferry over to across the bay, because, of course, the bridge wasn't built. And then they got on the train, and they went up Mount Tamalpais and watched for the total eclipse. And it was an impression that was made on my mother that she talked about it. So when the path of totality was going to come through Oregon, I had to get myself, I mean, it's a day trip, an hour up, 20, 30 minutes up to Corvallis, and I was in totality. That was about 3 or 4 minutes. And then the sun came back out, and we had our picnic, and we came home. But that was what really struck me, was all those little images. In Northern California, we had a partial come through one time, and I did the thing about take a beer can, cut the top off of it, and then put a pinhole through the bottom of it. And I had a white camper shell then. And I could take that beer can and have the pinhole camera from the beer can make the projection. So I could project the image of the sun onto my camper shell. So I'm not looking straight up at it, but I'm seeing the moon, the curvature of the moon on the sun.
You mean you don't want to do what Donnie does and just stare right at it?
No, I'm spending too much money getting a shot in my eye every month to waste my eyesight on something like that. I'm trying to keep it.
Well-reasoned decision. I just had a note from Matt in San Francisco. My goodness gracious, this show is flying by. We're 5 minutes before the beginning of the third hour. And we got some catching up to do. And please don't let Geno's challenge just sit there unloved. Please. It's $205 to go on that. It's funny, you know, all the little initials and stuff. The subject line of Matt's note is FFS. And in the wider world, FFS means, oh, for fuck's sake. But in this context, it means facial feminization surgery. There's a gal who worked at one of the locations I oversaw, and she had FFS. She was so much happier afterward. It was very subtle to my eyes, but it really does make a lovely difference without losing her uniqueness or individual look, if you will. Much different than the ladies who used to shop at a store I ran in Marin County. For a while, I thought they were all the same person till they came in together. Then I thought they were sisters, but no, they just all shared the same plastic surgeon. Apparently, he had a thing for high cheekbones, duck lips, and eyes pulled so tight they always looked surprised. Caddy, table for one. Yeah, saucer of cream.
Meow.
But that's true. I mean, they have different aesthetics, and it's absolutely fascinating. There's if I had spaceship money, and wanted to wait another 2 or 3 years, because that's how long the wait list is. There's a doctor in San Francisco, and this may be the guy that worked on those girls, but he is one of the best in the world. His name's Deschamps Brawley, Deschamps Brawley, and a full facial feminization with him is about $100,000 cash on the barrel head, and he doesn't take any insurance except like Starbucks. But again, the wait list is forever. I'm going with a surgeon who's well thought of down at Duke, because you know, 4 hours away from home. Yeah, there's another one. There's another guy down in and granted, he's in his 80s now, but he's down in Beverly Hills. And there's a woman I know online. He did her FFS, and she's actually a year older than me, and she looks maybe 35, and there's nothing clockable left about her face. And ultimately, you know, not to spend too much time on, you know, my own struggles or anything, but what remains of my gender dysphoria, and is significant, is focused on two places, and one of them is my face. But, you know, that's that. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for that. And it's I'm told that it's painful for the first few days, but they, you know, keep you kind of looped out, and it can't be any more painful than what I went through in the immediate aftermath a couple of years ago. Thank you so
I was
much.
I say that.
Thank you so much, Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in on the Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge, so now we are down to $180 to go on that. If we finish that challenge, we will be down to $900 to go. That's basically Wednesday, Thursday, and tonight. But we could knock out Monday and Tuesday of what has been thus far an unfunded week. Thank you again, Gino. And thank you so much to everyone who's jumped in so far. I did have another note from Jessica in Minnesota. I mentioned we were talking about reptiles a little bit ago. And she said, we have a bearded dragon, too. Gizmo gives us the judgmental side eye as well. That's what it is, the judgmental side. Really? Oh, and beware the Ides of March, Jessica says. My paternal grandmother was an Ide, E-I-D-E, pronounced Ide. Was she someone to be bewared of, Jessica? I had a grandmother who was an IDA, IDA, and she was an ID, because Appalachia. Darlene in Connecticut says, let's hope that the last person Trump talks to just before the solar eclipse reminds him to be sure to look up at the sun all natural without protective glasses like he did when he was masquerading as president. You know, for old time's sake. Exact, yes. Because, you know, he has Trumpian superpowers. He can look at a solar eclipse and not have to worry about it harming any part of his brain because, well, there's nothing of it left anymore, and the optic nerve's just connected directly to his lizard brain, and everything else is shrieking spirochetes.
Even better is to tell him to use a pair of binoculars so he can get a better view.
Oh, and the Ides of March. It's Reverbo's birthday. 72 revolutions around the sun, Reverbo tells me. Happy birthday, Reverbo. Reverbo, and many, many happy returns, my friend. He said to me yesterday when we were talking about the stink bug, I can't believe this. You're a girl and scared of insects. Classic stereotype. As you've noticed, I'm not letting go of this easily. Well, it's just some bugs. I don't get the shrieks over, you know, sweet things like honeybees and
like spiders.
I'll carry a spider out and put it in the grass, especially if it's one of those big old, you know, spiders that live in the grass kind of affairs. And the little jumping spiders, well, those are just sweet and precious little creatures.
There's something just wrong with you. Something wrong with you.
What? Have you? No, the jumping spiders are...
You'll carry spiders around. I'm sorry, that's a bridge too far.
No, you just get like a cup and a piece of paper. You slide the piece of paper under the spider. You put the cup on top of it, and you carry them gently outside because they're eating things that I don't like mosquitoes. Maybe stink bugs.
Meat ground. Ground meat.
Ants.
Oh, speaking of meat, this is one I ran across. Because, well, the maggot legislature in Florida has apparently solved all the other problems in that godforsaken, benighted state. Yeah, homelessness is solved, hunger is solved.
Snake nests are all taken care of.
They've gotten all the Burmese pythons, Christopher. I'm so glad to know you listen. Because now the legislature of the state of Florida is going after, wait for it, lab-grown meat. In order to protect the Florida meat industry. Monkey Up, back last month, said, I know the legislature is doing a bill to protect our meat. Ha ha ha! You need meat, okay? And we're going to have meat in Florida. Ha 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 ha! We're not going to have fake meat. Like, that doesn't work. Ha 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 ha! Fake meat, definitely fake meat. But the science behind it's actually fascinating. I mean, I read the article and it's like, well, you know, is PETA going to have a fit about this? Because it's, the way it's described, you know, this isn't like Impossible Burgers or Veggie Burgers or anything like that. This is cell-cultivated meat, and the Congressional Research Service says it's developed in a lab, grown from a sample of animal cells that does not require the slaughter of animals, but it's actually meat. And the CRS explains that it's a five-step process. The biopsy of animal cells, then there's cell banking, cell growth, harvesting, and food processing. It's heavily regulated by the FDA in the United States, as well as the U.S. Department of Agriculture. There aren't that many companies doing it. There are 43 companies in the U.S. that are working on it, but only two have FDA approval in the U.S., namely Good Meat and Upside Food. But it's already had like $3 billion invested via private capital. Another $5 million's been invested or issued via the National Science Foundation and research grants. $12 million in grants by the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture. But down in Florida, maggot Representative from Hillsborough County, Danny Alvarez, said,
As of today, the unknowns are so great, there are no long-term studies.
Meanwhile, Representative Tyler Sirwa, another maggot who introduced a similar bill, said,
Farming and cattle are incredibly important industries to Florida, so I think this is a very relevant discussion for our state to have.
And then, of course, because, you know, they're all natural and biological, he said,
It's an affront to nature and creation. I think it raises important ethical concerns about the limitations and boundaries we should place on this type of science. I think you could see a very slippery slope here leading to things like cloning, which are very troubling to me.
I wonder if
yourself a cowbell for...
For?
A cowbell full of bound dairies.
No, well, thank you. Dairies, bound dairies. Again, I'm so glad when y'all get the little off-the-cuff ones. It means so much to me. But
I guess Dolly didn't put out.
This would be a win for PETA, right? No critters getting harmed or anything like that. They could get back to their core task of, you know, kidnapping family pets and killing them in their murder vans.
God,
Marjorie be down there screaming about the dangers of the baby organ harvesting industry.
Was it a year or more ago that she was out there pissing and moaning about meat grown in peach tree dishes? Do I recall that correctly?
Well, it's Georgia. Of course, it would be a peach tree dish. Well, I'll tell you what, Monkey Up better protect his meat if Schlappy's going to come by for a visit.
You earned that one, Christopher.
Yep, you can't slap your meat. That's terrible.
Emilio.
I was going to say that...
Have you seen his wife? Is she well protected?
Okay, go next.
I was going to say that DeKlantis ought to be on the lookout for Marjorie Taylor Greene and her peach tea dressers because she might make sure he gets indicted. And no, I didn't say that for wanting a cowbell. I just said that.
No, but it qualified.
Sure.
I mean, no, you never exhibit cowbell thirst.
And you know what? She better watch out for better look out for the chimeras.
Oh, the chimeras and the gazpacho. and the gazpacho police.
Oh my God, these people.
I bet Roger ate chimeras in Peru.
You know, the people who scream about you wanting to use the right pronouns are going to be pretty mad that you're picking them for the pronunciations.
Yeah, but I'm a professional. I'm a professional broadcaster.
I don't agree. And the reason I don't agree is what's funny about this stuff is that it's not the pronunciation. It's the fact that they don't have any fucking clue what they're talking. They don't.
It's like Burns Lawler sings about in Alabama Jesus. It's not the heat. It's the stupidity.
Uh-huh.
I realized that. I was being sarcastic.
And you remember it was Marjorie Taylor. She had her finger going across that statement.
Yes. Yes. She was.
And she was doing it really carefully.
Yeah, because she was deploying her crotchety old Evelyn Wood speed reading technique.
Yeah, because somebody gave her that. Say this.
Yeah.
She got indicted. Played.
Indicted. Great. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a troll on her staff that did that.
Oh, her staff's got lots of trolls.
Mm-hmm.
I think that happened to Donnie a lot. I think a lot of people set his ass up.
Well, she's and you know what? She's probably indignant over the indiction. See what I did there?
Oh. Cowbell, cowbell.
Yeah. By the way, Robin.
Yeah.
And I tuned in late because I was in the subway. I didn't hear any talk about Rome.
Oh, that was at the front of the program.
Okay, because I thought
there's plenty of.
Okay, you got my text message where I said, of all the days to be on the front porch, I thought, this is a gift.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So we talked about Cato the Younger and what an asshole he was, and how Caesar read a love note from his sister to Caesar, to whom she was not married, and Cato insisted that it be read out loud on the before the conscript fathers, and Caesar obliged, and Cato stormed out in a huff, and a huff and a half. Good times in ancient Rome.
It's the one night you can talk about that we can't pick on you for it.
I think that's true.
But staying on the political side, are you folks following what's happened to Lauren Bobbitt?
Well, her son, but I haven't heard anything more than that. What's the latest?
Relative to her candidacy, you mean?
Her candidacy. The district that she moved into to run, the guy who she was going to be running against as the incumbent, just resigned from Congress. As of today, I believe it is his last day.
Oh, yeah.
And the timing is that they have to hold a special election to fill his vacancy.
For the remainder of the term,
yes. Colorado, you cannot run for two offices at the same time. So if she wants to run for the vacancy, she can't run in the general. And if she runs in the general, she's going to be running against an incumbent, other Republican, who just got elected in a special election in that district. And there's all kinds of questioning on whether or not the guy who just resigned to set up this quandary for her to be running, or whether he's just so fed up he's taking a hike.
Might be a little both.
Yeah.
I understood it a little bit differently, Roger. Maybe you've got the skinny and I'm a lost ball in high grass. I thought that she could, since she is holding, she is presently occupying a seat in another district, she is forbidden from running for the seat in the district she wants to run in next time. And so she's having a paranoid fit online, and she's trying to fundraise off the idea that the swamp creatures are attacking her MAGA awesomeness, and she needs $3.33, friends, so that she can make America great again in her new district. But yeah, ultimately she can't, but she's trying to spin it as, you know, some sort of political genius that, you know, she, and so, you know, she's going to continue to represent the people of my district until I don't. Because she'd have to resign. Have to resign the one seat in order to fill the unfulfilled the empty seat, and then they'd have to have a special election in her district. She's an idiot.
I think someone has came about all this discussion about this is because when he announced he was leaving this week, someone said something about her to Ken Buck, and Ken Buck said the equivalent of, "Well, fuck her, she's a moron." And that's what kind of started this whole contract. He's doing this on purpose to get at her. No, he's just disgusted with his party and what it's become. That's all it is.
Yeah, and, I mean, come on, he's a Republican, Jeremy, so there's probably already a cushy lobbying job lined up. Hell, maybe he'll go over to the Heritage Foundation.
Well there is, but I think the funniest part about all this is when they asked him why'd he do it, he kind of, like, kind of gave the eyebrow, like, really? And then he kind of laughed and said, there's a few more people like me. So there's a good chance that by either this summer or even before the election, we'll have control of the House once again because they're going to lose their majority because of their own maneuvering. They've only got
two or three seats now, aren't
they? It's a one-seat advantage.
One seat?
One seat. Yes. So Scalise, if that comes back, his cancer, then we're even Steven.
No, it's just people leaving in general, not even cancer.
Well, and then there's this Matt, you know, we talked about Matt. It just gates worse being subpoenaed over the by the counsel for the woman whom he allegedly had sex with when she was underage. Well, now he's trying to he's making himself even more beloved among his own carcass. The GOP leadership in the House have begged him not to go and try to tank the candidacies of their incumbents. But lo and behold, this weekend, earlier this month, he was in Texas for an event with some maggot named Brandon Herrera, who's a gun humper social media influencer who primaried Tony Gonzalez, the incumbent, and has managed to force him into a runoff. And the House leadership has said, can we please avoid all this nasty internecine squabbling? And Matt, it just gets worse, then quoted a post from Axios and said, in other news, grassroots Republicans plead with House GOP leaders to stop sending money to Ukraine. Fucking asshole. You know, where's a piano or an anvil, you know, just randomly falling from the sky when you need one? And Gonzalez may be in trouble because he was censured by his own party last year because he supported a bipartisan gun safety bill. And so that runoff comes up on May the 28th.
And, is it a runoff, and so there's an empty seat that's being filled?
No. Tony Gonzalez is the incumbent. And
so their primary is May 28th.
No, they've already had the primary. The runoff was forced in the primary, and so it's him and Brandon Herrera on the 28th in the runoff election.
Okay, runoff for the primary.
Yes.
Yeah, shit's getting real. Shit's getting interesting now. Things are moving. There's no more. We got plenty of time left. I'm slipping away.
Time keeps on slipping into the future, Christopher.
Yes.
Time keeps on slipping into the future.
No singing.
You'll notice I did not sing because we're... We've got $180 to go on the Fuck Aaron Rodgers Challenge courtesy of Gino. And we got about 40 minutes to make up that $180.
Speaking of singing, I don't know if anyone else heard this, but I guess this week Alex Jones was drunk on air. Big surprise. He explained he was going to eat leftist ass.
Yes.
This is the thing about it, mostly about his neighbor. His kids aren't going to starve, so he'll eat and kill his leftist neighbor. Well, someone took that whole online rant and set it to music, so now it's a song.
Wait, you're kidding. Where is it? Linky?
No, I don't know what the link is. Bob Seska played it last, or either it was Bob or maybe Stephanie played it. Goddamn, it was fucking funny.
Okay, well, I'm looking now.
It's more like a rat, but it's definitely set to music. And, like, I'll eat leftist ass is the chorus. I'll eat leftist ass. I'll eat leftist ass.
Well, that actually fits because he does have a wonderful melodic voice. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Do your Alex Jones, Emilio.
I eat ass. I eat ass.
I think I found it. And by the way, I saw that meme. You posted it in the chat there, Jeremy. I will eat your leftist ass. The B side of that, because, you know, I keep up with the recording industry, the B side of that is I will toss your commie salad.
Well, this is like album number two from the lady from the West Virginia legislature.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, let's see if I've actually got this here. Hold on.
I will eat your leftist ass like corn on the cob. I'm ready. I will eat your ass. I will eat your leftist ass. I'm born on the cob. I'm ready. I will eat your ass. I will eat your leftist ass. I'm born on the cob. I'm ready. I will eat you. I will eat your ass. I'll barbecue your ass flat. I will cook your ass up so fast. And I'll tell them, boy, I killed a cow out back, baby. You think Christ would eat somebody? He would never do that. I will. I'm ready to hang them up, gut them and skin them and chop them up. You know what? I'm ready. I will eat your leftist ass like corn on the cob. I'm ready. I will. I will eat your ass. I will eat your leftist ass like corn on the cob. I'm ready. I will eat you. I will eat your ass. Your ass first. I swear to God, if it's the last thing I do, I'm gonna get my hands around your throat.
You're welcome.
Oh my God,
that was
Jeremy.
Great. Robin, not... are you chair dancing?
I was chair dancing big time.
It is catchy.
I haven't heard a remix this good since "Hide Your Wife, Hide Your Kids." You are so dumb. We
I had
will
to
find
sit
you.
Down. I had to sit down the first time I heard it last night. I had tears in my eyes saying, sir, sir, please play it again.
Please, sir.
Come on, the pussy song was just as good.
Yeah. God damn it. I try so hard, but the goddess just keeps doing this to me. Oh. But, well... Yeah, I'm still waiting for I Will Toss Your Liberal Salad.
Yeah, going back to Aaron Rodgers, it's nice to see that all these bandwagon jumpineers, you know, jumping on the fuck Aaron Rodgers bandwagon. I've been doing that since he became a Packer.
Well, he's been a jackass from, like, forever. But there's with the Alex Jones thing. There's a right wing phenomenon right now of maggots and white wingers, the usual suspects, being fascinated, intrigued with cannibalism, and it's so bad right now that Leon Scum's own platform, you know, that place that used to be called Twitter. Leon Scum's own platform took down one of their owner's tweets because he posted an unverified video clip that claimed was video of cannibalism in Haiti. There is a humanitarian crisis taking place in Haiti, largely, as Ron and Raleigh has noted, you know, of the United States' own... making. How long was it ago that the creepy dead Marion Pat Robertson, former liquor supply officer, was talking about Haiti being possessed by the devil? But violence is running rampant in Haiti, and Leon Scum posted an NBC News article about that violence. And mentioned the fact that he's been blathering on about cannibal gangs. And so he responded, he posted the article and said, "What do you call this?" And that was all reported by Bloomberg. The video clip cannot be verified because, well, it ain't happening. Even the State Department, speaking to Business Insider, said, "We have not," and this is a quote, "received any credible reports regarding this claim. People should seek fact-based verification of sensational claims from credible sources before sharing on social media."
They probably got that because the guy who's running the country now, his nickname is Barbecue, because he does like to burn people alive, but I don't know if he eats them.
whenever you mention Haiti, all I think about is the clip from 60 Minutes or CBS or something. But right after Junior got out of office and Obama just taken over, there was a massive earthquake there. So Junior and Clinton went over on a humanitarian mission and visited one of the encampments with the Red Cross. And they're both walking through and talking to injured kids in this and that. And Bill's shaking hands and George is shaking hands. And George shakes the hands of one of the little African or a little darker kid's hands. And as he turns away, he grabs the back of Clinton's shirt and wipes his hands off.
Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah, I remember that.
God.
Of course, I also remember Dim Leader dancing in Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Or a fucking moron going down to St. John's and throwing fucking bounty at them, saying, have a good time, have fun, have fun. And then the best part is Stephen Colbert roasting him for when he was in a bay somewhere. Someone's house is destroyed and a boat had gone right through the center of the fucking house.
Oh, yeah.
And he asked the person, is that your boat? The person said, no, it's my house. She said, that's too bad. It's a nice boat.
Oh, and by the way, that whole I will eat your leftist ass thing is actually, as Ralph's just pointed out to me, from 3 years ago. I guess it's just evergreen. So,
well, with all the projection that Republicans do and how they dealt with the basement of the pizza parlor that didn't have a basement and claiming Hillary Clinton was down there eating babies or some bullshit. How many months is it going to be before the progeny of somebody or somebody actually there is going to come out that they have engaged in cannibalism?
Wouldn't surprise me. We'll hear it first on this program.
Well, but the thing is that the Republicans are so inclined to blame Democrats for doing something, and 3 to 6 months later, it turns out they're the ones that did it. And I'm thinking right now about the illegal people voting illegally.
Right.
And all the ones that have been convicted that I've heard about have all been Republicans that voted illegally.
And that, yeah, that cocksuckers senior, in Florida. Yeah.
The senior citizen housing area in Florida, where there were several of them. I mean, one of them voted for his dead wife, and the other one voted in Florida and then voted in Kentucky or something because he had an address in both places, so he voted in both places.
Well,
and what happened to him?
Yeah, Mark Meadows. Him. Mark Meadows was registered in three different states, I think.
Yeah.
What
you realize that Derek? You realize that Derek Chauvin was committed? Convicted of two crimes too. One was the hate crime on George Floyd. The second one, he's caught voting twice. He had a camp somewhere in Minnesota. He voted there too.
I didn't know that.
Well, to further that, I mean, it's with all the pedo stuff, pedo, it always seems to be they're the ones who are doing it.
Toe tapping in the restroom at an airport.
No, look at the guy who went up for 400 years in Texas about in the last week. Or the JROTC instructor from Huntsville, Alabama, who got busted for having sex with one of his students.
Or there was, I don't know, some level political operative, and he was caught with videos of babies. That was his stuff. And he said, I love baby stuff, is one of the messages they intercepted.
And I don't know if you covered it, Robin, but this will annoy people equally as much as that. But if anyone remembers, it was either late last summer, early last fall, there was that Army National Guard guy who was caught sharing stuff on Discord with his friends. It wasn't even the stuff that's really classified, but it was eyes only type stuff. He got 16 years.
Ooh.
16 years.
And meanwhile, according to an article in Rolling Stone, well, this is peak MAGA. The Nitwit Nero campaign is running online ads. And some of their ad spending is, well, monetizing pro-Nazi content on Rumble. One of the ads says, I'm very humbly asking if you could chip in $5, $10, or even $25. Help me win back the White House and make America great again, greater than ever before. I promise you that. His ads are running in front of, and we've had his clips on this program, Stupiders. It's a video where Stupiders says Adolf Hitler is a hero for book burnings.
He also says the Nazis are heroes because they're only protecting themselves against Poland.
Yeah. And so the ad ran in front of that video. Also in that video, he says that the Jews are leading a conspiracy to make us surrender to LGBTQ acceptance and sexual degeneracy.
It's always the Jews.
Yeah. The Jews.
Can I ask anybody a point? You know, I would love to see anybody go to one of these maggot rallies or a group of maggots. Everything is a conspiracy. You know, the talk about the election, you know, the 60 court cases that got dismissed and the Bill Barr and all these people who basically said it was not, that the election was not stolen. And it's all a vast conspiracy. And I would love somebody to say to them, just ask them a question. Okay, it's a vast conspiracy. Great. So many people are in on it, yet nobody has squealed.
Yeah, that's kind of a clue, don't you think?
Yeah. Why? I don't know why people don't.
That's because George Soros paid them all off to keep their mouths shut.
Well, and see, they've all eaten. They've all eaten, baby. And they've all had blood transfusions with adrenochrome, and so they're all equally bound together, and none of them can ever snitch.
And the Bill Gates vaccine too.
Oh, but well, yes, and the liquid barcodes, and the 5G.
That goes without saying, Chris. We're not dumb.
I wish I could sit here and laugh at what you guys are saying, but you know what?
No, it ain't necessarily a laughing matter.
No, it's not. I could expect them saying any one of these things. Yeah, well. Or, you know, and I can, a number of the responses will be, you clearly don't do your own research, okay?
Yeah.
So what research should I do?
Their favorite pronoun now is truth. I know the truth. I know the truth.
I'd come back at him with a slightly different conspiracy, and that is that Donald Trump actually does not want to have a Republican majority in the House of Representatives, because the Republican National Committee is now footing all of his legal bills, and there's no money left to run campaigns throughout the country for Republican Congress people.
Yeah, it's just Donnie's little piggy bank now.
Well, and also that's actually a different organization. I wonder how that organization is raising money.
Well, but that's the conspiracy I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
And it's out front and everybody's talking about it and nobody's paying any attention to it. But there's
and Mullah Moses Mike Johnson is getting screwed, but he doesn't dare say a word about it.
Right, and there's 33 Senate seats that are up, and what, 20 of them are Republican?
Or I thought the Democrats.
No, 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 20 of them are Democrats, 20 of them are Democrats, Roger.
20 Democrats and 13
yeah,
Republicans.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah.
Okay, but the fact is there's no money to support those Senate seats. There's no money to support the 217, 18 House members. And all that money is going to the attorneys. Now, what kind of a conspiracy is that? and it's out front.
And you know what they would say, Roger? They would say, see, that's the deep state bringing all these fake charges to make him have to pay for all of his legal fees. And of course, my retort to that, or to make the party have to pay for it, of course, my retort to that would be, but I thought he was an extremely wealthy person.
Right.
He's so wealthy, he shouldn't have to pay his bills.
Well, back in 2015 or so, he was bragging that he was so rich, nobody would have to donate to his campaign.
Absolutely.
And he wouldn't accept his salary.
And he did donate it 2 times.
I think I was going to say there was a couple times. You know, I'll throw this out there. And has everyone here or has anybody heard of the business magazine called Cranes? There's
yes.
Cranes New York, Cranes Chicago. Okay. Cranes has a top one, at least in New York, it has a top 100 businesses. And for years, the Trump organization, I think, was in the top 10, maybe top 5, with $9 billion in revenue. You can find this. Go look for this article online. This is interesting. Well, I think what Cranes does is periodically it does a deep – and it, for most part, it's self-reporting. Well, once in a while or periodically, it does a deep dive onto people on its list to see if really is what it says it is. And they did a deep dive on the Trump organization, and they found out, or according to their own analysis, they did not have a $9 billion revenue. They had a $900 million revenue, which is only one-tenth of what he claimed. And I remember when I read that, that's where I got the inkling in my mind that he is not rich. And I think what has confirmed that is these criminal trials. Look, those are tangents to him.
And yeah, the money is what matters.
That's what matters, and the perception that he doesn't have any.
But the thing is, Steve, and tell me if you disagree. The money cases, the civil cases, are what matters to him. But the problem is the burden of proof and the standard of proof is such that the odds of this getting overturned on appeal are tiny. Wouldn't you agree?
And you know what?
That Chubb Group dude is going to be out $91 million that he's never going to see again. Unless he got some sort of backroom, side deal with Jared.
I'll give you a backroom conspiracy on that one. That Chubb Group is tied into Switzerland. And
yes.
I don't know of a single rich person that doesn't have hidden accounts in Switzerland. And I'm wondering if they have took as collateral the bank account numbers in Switzerland of Donald J. Trump.
I just don't think there are any because I think he's broke. I don't think he has any money.
You don't think somewhere along the way when he was getting those Russian-backed loans and working with Deutsche Bank, you don't think that he squirreled some of that away in a numbered account in, you know, Zurich?
I've said for years, his lie is deeper than you think it is, anyone that will ask. He is a billionaire, but not the kind of billionaire he wants you to think he is. It's all in debt, in buildings he's bought, and money he's just talked to those. He is a billionaire in debt. He just won't say the debt word on it. So he really does have billions and billions. It's in fucking debt. It always has been.
Well, he's run basically a Ponzi scheme, and you get to a certain amount of wealth, and people are going to lend you money. And you just keep borrowing, robbing from Peter and paying Paul and skimming off.
Yeah, there used to be a word for that, Roger. It was called kiting.
Yeah.
And
I think he's a kite master.
Yeah. Kite flyer. Oh, and I need to say thank you to our kind anonymous internet friend. We are now down to $120 to go on the Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge. Thank you so much, kind anonymous internet friend. That's 10 bucks at 12 people at 10, 10 people at 12, you know, what have you. We can do this, and we can at least get down to the point where we'll only be $1,200 in the hole come Moran Monday. We'll be $900 in the hole if we can just finish this challenge. We'll be covered for Monday and Tuesday. And it's terribly important that we do so. Terribly, 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 because still dealing middle-of-the-month bills, and, well, I got a health insurance premium to pay. And, well, that's where we are, because I need to be able to keep going to the doctor. In fact, I got a message today. I have to be at a surgeon's office in Somersville on Monday to get some creepy little moles, you know, removed. So there's that.
Well, good luck to you. We just got hit with $1,500 copay for two cataract surgeries this month.
Ow!
Wow. And both you and Steve are correct when you say the money trials on the civil things is what's going to bother him the most. Because he's a narcissist. It exposes him to the world. And worst of all, it exposes his own lies to himself. That's going to be detrimental to him.
Yeah, well, and, you know, again, the Sage Todd, PVUH, he ain't going to make it.
That's why that.
It's like being on a bad skateboard going downhill. At some point in time, he's going to get the speed wobbles, and it's going to fly all to pieces.
Yeah, that's why the Emmys, that joke, Jimmy Kimmel joke, you know that cut deep, real deep.
You mean, aren't you up past your jail time?
Yes, and everybody laughing at him, all the elites in Hollywood laughing their asses off him. Poor old Donnie.
I've been telling people for a while now, I still expect Robin's prophecy to come true. He's getting up in front of a camera somewhere when he loses his shit. He's going to tear off his clothes, start playing with him, throwing his shit around. That's what's going to happen. It's going
to
happen.
He's going to try to strangle Rusty the bailiff.
Yes. Well, the cop that doesn't hold the door next time he's at a hearing.
I think that's why they keep him away from, you know, live fowl. Because he'll bite the head off a chicken. He'll do it in a minute.
Yeah. Ozzy, hold my beer, right?
Exactly.
But, Steve, going back to what you said about the maggot rallies, has anyone seen The Good Liars? They go out on tour with these people and they interview them. And some of the interviews they do, they blow. You could watch the heads explode off of these maggots when they start delving into their conspiracy theories and going down that rabbit hole. And then the good liars like keep asking questions and are like, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? But what about this? And then all of a sudden you see just smoke coming out of their ears like, huh? What?
Yeah.
The scarier ones are when they interview some of the older guys and they say, do you think Trump's going to jail? And they say, oh yeah, he's going to jail. What are you going to do? Well, I'll donate when he's in jail. It doesn't make a difference to some of these maggots. They don't care, even though they'll be going to jail.
Yes. Have you seen? I've seen ones where I've seen a guy. I saw this guy say, "Yeah, I will give him money rather than pay my mortgage."
Yes. There are people who are rationing their insulin to send him some of their fucking money. It's that bad in some cases.
Teeth are falling out of their skull.
That is grade A Flavor Aid Jim Jones shit.
Yes.
How is that
Scientology
not?
Times a million. Yes. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, those are definitely some out-of-control thetans going on there.
Yeah, and you know what? Think about this for a second. Let's go back to 2016 before 2016. If you'd have told these Republicans that, hey, I have a candidate for you. He's a big businessman from New York City, real estate developer, used to own some casinos,
pro-choice,
did carry bankruptcy several times. What would you think about a candidate like that?
they would have been like, are you kidding me?
As a Jewish son-in-law.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah.
Right? Jewish grandkids.
These people would never go you want someone. I just, someone like that. I mean, I have gotten to the point where I do not, how did we get here? How did we get here?
I know. It haunts me every day, Steve.
We got and it started with Ronald Reagan destroying the educational system.
Yes,
California.
Yes, bingo, bingo.
And then he moved to Washington, D.C. and destroyed the educational system of the country. And every Republican since Ronald Reagan has chipped away at education and bad-mouthed teachers, bad-mouthed any kind of government regulation, whether it be the Environmental Protection Agency or you name it, this whole bullshit about government can't do anything and government's here to fuck you over, and they've cut taxes. And what the rubes don't realize is they've cut the taxes on the rich and charged the middle more. And then the middle gets pissed off because they're paying too many taxes. The Republicans come in. They cut those goddamn teachers. And why the hell should a teacher get paid for the rest of their life after they only worked 20 years? And they're going against any kind of public pensions. Because, you know, you're a good, hardworking American. Why should you have to pay the teacher forever? And they've played a game with bullshit ever since Reagan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Started calling Social Security entitlements, even though you pay into it your whole fucking working life. You've earned it. It's not an entitlement. You put into it. It's not just given to you.
And then on top of that, when you talk about Social Security, up until Reagan, the people who were working donated and paid into the people who had already retired. But Ronnie got this bright idea that because the baby boomers were a bulge like going through a snake, that we should prepay our own Social Security for when we retired, and created a trust fund that should run out when about the time that all the baby boomers have died, which is about another 15 years. And now they scream, well, the Social Security system is going to run out of the money in the trust fund in 2050. And then the Social Security system is going to be broke. No, it's just going to go back to where there isn't going to be the glut of retired people who had to not only prepay their own, but they had to pay for their parents. And then it'll go back to the working people pay for the retired people. But the people of this country don't understand that because they've been so beautifully masterminded by the elimination of the Telecommunications Act that set up one talk show host called Rush Limbaugh, and he's on every fucking AM station in the country because they allowed the limits on you can own one AM station and one FM station and created these humongous networks, got rid of all the local people that went to the fair and talked up the 4-H steer sale and all the rest of that shit, and ran it all out of one office in Washington, D.C. or some fucking place.
Well, remember, Roger, that was Bill Clinton. That was Bill Clinton, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, Newt's legislation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I'm saying is it started with Reagan.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
In doing all this destruction. Bill Clinton didn't do us any favors.
No. No, he did not. Hey, isn't there an antitrust violation suit to be had against Sinclair Broadcasting? Don't they fucking need to be broken up?
No, because other competitors still exist,
what?
Cumulus, iHeartRadio. I mean,
Romney's racket.
Yeah, right. I want to beg to differ with Roger just a tiny little bit. And by the way, thank you, Brendan. Brendan, thank you so much. We're now down to 110 on the Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge. We're down, so that's 11 more people at $10 a piece. Thank you, Brendan, so much. But I differ with you, more in a matter of degree. On a national basis, you said it started when Reagan trashed the education system in California. Yes. It just like the photograph of the members of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense standing on the steps of the California Capitol, suddenly, well, changed things gun-wise in California to a certain extent. But the roadmap actually gets created in 1972 by a man named Lewis Powell.
Oh, yeah.
Who would be rewarded for this with a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court of the United States.
The Powell memo.
Yeah. And also a little bit before that, the John Bircher people and all that kind of stuff.
My bitch with Reagan is that when he was married to Jane Wyman, he was a good Democrat. And when Jane Wyman kicked his ass out and he met up with Nancy Davis, Nancy Davis's father had a shitload of money. And the story goes that Nancy Davis's father said, if you become a Republican, I can make you governor of California. And Ronnie was kind of failing at his acting career because he was never a very good actor for the movies, and it wasn't going anywhere. And so he sucked on the money tit. And sure enough, Nancy Davis's father made him governor, and then he parlayed it because of his acting skills into becoming president. And he was just a puppet for this fascist state that we're now suffering from.
There's a reason I refer to him as old 666 himself, you know.
He should spend some time at the Span Ranch.
If nothing else, the Republican Party has always been good at the long con, y'all.
That's right.
And on America, his own son said well before his second term, he didn't know who he was anymore. People were talking for him.
Oh, and by the way, with seven minutes to go in the program, I got a note from Gino, the Aaron Rodgers challenge. Come on, guys and gals, make me pay. And we're $110 from that happening. So, not saying, well, just saying.
I just spent an hour and 20 minutes driving 24 miles because of traffic. Ugh.
Oh, but in 24 hours, you won't have to worry about that for a little bit.
No, it's less than 24 hours, baby. I'm leaving at 9:25 my time, a.m.
Where are you guys going, Tracy?
Puerto Vallarta.
Oh, lovely.
The queerest place in Mexico.
I already have my drink picked out. A jalapeno watermelon margarita with tahini around the rim.
Awesome. Girl.
Tracy, I got a question for you based on something you said to the group last week. Is the group you got in with the L.A. Innocence Project?
On what? On my expungement?
Knocking on the doors?
No.
Knocking on the doors?
No, the group I think you said you might have a new job lined up with.
Yeah, no. It's called the Social Impact Center. Okay. And I do have a job. So basically what's happening, starting the 1st of April, I will be doing a 3-month fellowship, with a small stipend with the founder of the organization. She's going, toward the end of April to the California Endowment, Center, where once a year, they do a fast pitch. And this is the first time since COVID that it's actually going to be in person. And they go in front of all these foundations and ask for money. So what she's going to do, basically the hope that her ask is about queer BIPOC people getting their records expunged and not being re-traumatized by having to go to like back to courthouses or dealing with, you know, public defenders or even a district attorney, just nothing like that, or even going into churches because that could be triggering as well. We want to find a safe space where people can come and start the process of their records being expunged without re-traumatizing them. And so she's on an ask of $750,000 to hire or have consultants of 12 lived life experience folks that knows what it's like to deal with the criminal justice system and their expertise. But mostly she asked me because this is like we're building it as we go. And her thing was, I want somebody like you because I want somebody to dream with me, to dream of the possibilities. So I am literally going to be on the ground floor of something that could be incredibly amazing.
Now, that's great, Tracy. So,
well, the only reason I asked is because Scott Peterson is back in the news.
Yeah, I was about
again.
To say, yeah, Scott. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah,
what?
Scott Peterson.
Scott Peterson is back in the news because the LA Innocence Project has taken up his case, saying that somebody. So here's what they're saying, that his wife witnessed a burglary at a house across the street from her, from their house at the time. They kidnapped her to keep her from talking, and they killed her. And they said that they found some burnt down carcass. And blah, blah, blah. But the disaster in Gloria Allred, I guess, I forgot about this, represented the bench that he was having an affair with. And she's saying everybody has the right to prove their innocence. But if the only thing they're saying is this is some, you know, this one piece of evidence, unless there's DNA, and how can you tell how long ago that DNA was in the car, you know? So it's slim enough. I just want him to go somewhere and just slither off into back under the rock he crawled from under. From under.
I thought his case was pretty open and closed, so yeah.
And y'all, the candidate that I was canvassing for, she won outright, so she doesn't have to go into a runoff in November. Two of the other candidates that I was rooting for, Isabel, I cannot think of her last name, but she was running against Kevin DeLeon, that racist piece of filth that decided that he, you know, he was just going to be Trump and I'm not going to leave. You know, even when the president of the United States calls for you to resign and you get the middle finger to Uncle Joe. No. So he was ahead at first, and then there was another candidate, I think he's an assembly person, they were running in second place. And Isabel, who is a civil rights attorney, a tennis right attorney, who, you know, first generation Angelino Filipina American. At first she was in third place, now she's ahead. So there will be a runoff election for her as well. And then same thing, there's another one. Her name is Jillian Burgos. And none of these women had any money, really, okay? But they're coming. People are hearing the fact we care about Angelinos, especially if you're a renter, because both of these candidates are lifelong renters. And both of them have dealt with housing insecurity and food insecurity and stuff like that. And so people are listening. So there's a chance that we will have, two more progressive members of LA City Council in addition to the three we already have.
That's great.
So, yeah, I'm going to fucking Puerto Vallarta tomorrow. I am so tired.
Yeah, you get to unplug, just unplug from all this stuff for a while.
I just won't be caring because it's an all-inclusive adults-only resort. Not the freaky deaky kind. Before anybody asks, no.
Yeah.
Because I'm Christopher. I know how y'all be thinking. So no, it's just no kids. And because that's all I and alcohol is included,
yes,
in the package. So again, I'm not a big drinker, but that part. And I'm sorry, Robbie, I know you got to end the show because this is, I just looked at song, what time it is. It's 5:01.
Go on a tequila distillery tour if you can, if you and Jan
No.
You don't wanna?
I mean, obviously, if it was rum, it'd be different. Even though I like margaritas, tequila, straight up.
Tequila sunrise, baby. Oh, they're good.
Oh no, I will fuck up a tequila sunrise, but I can't really do, like shots of tequila.
No, you don't really do shots at the distillery.
No.
Little tastings, little sippity sips.
Well, I could do sippity sips.
And it's really because, you know, the tequila, there's tequila and there's tequila. I mean, there's rot gut Mexican gasoline like old Jose Cuervo.
Yep.
And then there's the 100% Puro de Agave. And, you know, that comes in Plata or Blanca and then the Reposado and then the Añejo. And some of those Añejos are
like...
You're
calling a hoe.
Hoe what?
Robin, give Tracy a cowbell for, oh, no, I'll fuck up a tequila sunrise.
Absolutely. But some of the Añejos taste like, they're more like cognacs.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean...
Peruvian Pisco has a similar rot gut that goes into the Pisco Sour all the way up to a fantastic sipping liquor.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, all are not made alike. And the, you know, just like French wines, you know, the terroir of where the agave grows will influence the flavor. You know, some of it tastes peppery, some of it tastes smoky. It's almost like the terpenes in cannabis. Like there's, what's that one terpene in cannabis? Myrcene is what makes it taste like Mexican ditchweed.
Well, here's another exciting thing. So, my best friend, you guys know, who passed away in December, his family's from Jalisco, which is, you know, in Puerto Vallarta. And, well, he was from Guadalajara, but his wife is from Puerto Vallarta. And so I called, you know, it just dawned on me, so one of her cousins or somebody is going to pick up Jan and I and do a tour of, you know, Puerto Vallarta from where we pick up when they pick us up from the airport till we get to the hotel, because the hotel is about a 35-minute drive from the airport. So yeah, your girl is incredibly, I'm happy and sad at the same time, because I was telling Robin and I spoke earlier, and as much as I know I need to go away and as tired and exhausted as I am, I had to buy new clothes because I've gained an incredible amount of weight. And so when I was trying on clothes, it just put me into a depression that was just, I was like, okay, I couldn't see anything pretty about me or intelligent or anything. I just saw just overweight, middle-aged, balding. It was just horrible. So I'm going to be fine, but it's just like, you know, when you can't see anything good in yourself, I've been over half a century being indoctrinated with the European standard of beauty, and it's going to take a minute to get over that shit, as Robin well knows.
Oh, she does.
That's right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I've got a couple of emails to get to before we wrap things up. Mark, behind enemy lines in Florida, says, 1947, Reagan was determined to be an FBI informant, spying on his fellow actors and directors. His ID was L10. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, that's true. And Brendan says, I agree that Ray Gun was the bowel stimulant that brought... Brendan. I agree that Ray Gun was the bowel stimulant that brought us to where we are, but don't forget the Democrats. Remember the DLC, the New Democrats, the Reagan Democrats, the abandonment of state and city level races, and so on and so fucking forth? I'm still pissed about Hillary Clinton's thoughtless presumption of her own race in several key states. As I approach 80 years of age, and with my worsening health, that I get a chance to take a shit on Reagan's grave before I die. Peace, lady. Brendan. Oh, God, you'll have to take another number, Brendan, because the number of people who want to do that, well, the number of people who want to piss on his grave will be enough to float it out to fucking sea from Santa Barbara.
Well, I could do that because I, you know what, because I refuse to go to the Ronald Reagan, you know, museum because Jan is one of those, you know, Democrats that voted for his ass in 1980 and 1984. And she still doesn't understand why I refuse to go to that museum. But he's him and Nancy, you know, Mommy. Or whatever he called it.
Well,
they're buried there. And I'm like, you know what? I might go ahead and get like that, you know, and get, go ahead and get pee in a cup and just go there and just pour it gingerly over their graves. Like I'll just say it's Mountain Dew or something.
Almost brazing, you're saying brazing their grave with the urine?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Gently braised. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, I said gingerly. Around, you know,
gingerly. Gingerly.
Yeah. I got my new teeth in, so I probably have, you know, I'm working with this list, but it's getting better, but yeah. So,
well, enjoy that beautiful Mexican sun. I love Puerto Vallarta.
I think the sunsets are going to blow your mind.
Yeah, we're supposed to have an ocean view. So I am just happy that we're going. And I was gonna say something. Oh, and let's not forget we have Reagan to thank for the beginning of the homeless crisis when he closed all the mental health hospitals. Mm-hmm. That part.
Well, those people don't even need housing. I mean, they don't know where they are, Mommy. Well.
Emilio. All right, y'all. I got to get out of here. I hope something happens with the podcast gang, the overnight crew. And we can knock out that last $110 of the Fuck Aaron Rodgers challenge. It'd be fantastic
if
we could.
Rodgers? I'm sorry. If it's a sports person, now I know why I don't know who that is.
Well, he is a sports person. He was the longtime quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. He lasted one game last season as the quarterback of the Jets before he went down, J-E-T-S, Jets. And it turns out he's a right-wing conspiracy theory spouting fucking loon.
Don't forget to throw in that he came out and said that Sandy Hook is a plot to take your guns and the kids are all actors and the teachers are still alive.
Right, that.
He said it. And then this week he issued multiple things, everything he said, yes.
And
so
he has
not apology.
But the thing is, he's been mentioned as a potential choice for vice president to run alongside rotted FK.
Oh, motherfucker.
And the funniest thing I've read about that, I think it was Lee in New York who sent it to me, a quote from, what was it, electoralvote.com, who said, where they said, he has a problem, though, because Aaron Rodgers has a conflict as an active NFL quarterback. The first Jets game is on September the 8th of this year, and, well, he could conceivably be available to campaign after that once the Jets are no longer in contention for any titles, which means he'll be available on September 9th. Ow!
No, about halfway through the first quarter, he'll be available.
Yeah.
Ooh, Kenny has claws. Yikes.
Yes. Now. So that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for joining in the congregation and the conversation. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors and those who respond to the challenges and make the challenges. Thank you again, Gino. Hopefully it'll be knocked out by Monday. As it stands, fingers crossed, if it's knocked out by Monday, we'll come into More In Monday, $1,200 in the hole. And unfunded for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Monday. That's if we meet Gino's challenge, which will knock out Monday and Tuesday. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Jeremy, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Remember, y'all, please like each episode of the podcast. Hit that little like button at Podbean or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Podcast Republic or Odyssey or any of those places. Leave a review. It's really easy to leave a review at Podcast Republic. And, help grow the visibility of the program. We are seeing increasing numbers, and it's gratifying because that means y'all are the ones who are doing it, because you're increasing the visibility of the program via the algorithms, the same algorithms that the Trump campaign blamed for why their ads are appearing adjacent to, Nazis. I don't think it's the algorithms. I think it's the Nazism. But, I'm a hysterical woman, so what? Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you haven't already. I hope we mostly have. I hope we all have. Get a flu shot if it's still cold where you are, because flu season ain't over, and you don't want a spring or a summer flu. Ugh. Wear your mask if you're around maggots for obvious reasons. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you. Pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And, if a former Green Bay Packers quarterback comes towards you, traded Packers green and gold for Jets green and white, and continues to babble about, "I never said anything bad about Sandy Hook. I didn't know." Well, avoid Aaron Rodgers like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.